Mock! Yeah! Ing! Yeah! Bird! Yeah! 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 Mockingbird! Don't everybody have you heard?
This is Commander's HQ. My name is Nate. With me is Alex.
Yo, yo.
And Brandon.
Hello.
Nick was going to join us, but it is Father's Day as we are recording this right now, and he was busy doing stuff for Father's Day. It wasn't done yet, so no big deal. That's fine. And before we go into how everybody's week was, just going to, if there's any fathers out there, happy Father's Day. I hope you had a nice, relaxing afternoon where you didn't have to do anything. But anyway, how was your week, Alex?
Pretty good. I've been in the process of making a 5-color mono green deck. Yeah.
5-color mono green deck.
I had Chatton look up every green hybrid card there is.
Oh, I bet he loved that.
It wasn't that hard. Yeah, it wasn't that hard. And I had a lot of the cards already. I just needed to look through and see a few other ones that I might need.
Yeah.
But it's basically everything, the hybrid is all green and something else.
Yeah.
So it was just something I thought, you know, this would be just funny. I probably wouldn't be that great because I can't think of a theme that would match it.
Yeah.
So then I'm still working on the cube. I'm having problems trying to find graveyard recursion in white and blue. In green and red.
You got the Resurrection?
Well, yeah, I got both of them.
Okay, you got Resurrection.
Miraculous Recovery.
Miraculous Recovery.
You have the
Karmic Guide.
Karmic Guide. And there's also the Angel one from Everson Restored.
Yeah, I think I do. The problem is the 2-color, because I got gold.
Mm-hmm.
So white and blue is a problem, because white and blue doesn't really deal with the graveyard.
White and blue deals with the graveyards in the aspect of bringing instant sorceries and enchantments and artifacts back.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's kind of hard, and I didn't even think about that. Then green and red.
Green and red? Green brings anything back.
Green, yeah, green's got all of the recollects.
And it's just bring a card. Yeah, recollects, recycle. Yeah, that's just, yeah. They're all just bring a card from
no,
green.
I mean the 2-color combination.
Yeah,
Gruul is impossible.
Yeah, you're going to be green powered with red.
So yeah, that's so yeah, my problem. So my problem is trying to figure out something that will push.
You can play the torrent. You got the torrent. Whatever the heck the thing.
Torrent called. Elemental.
No, it's something torrent. It's a black red hybrid. And if it costs 5, you bring a creature into the from your graveyard. If red was cast to, if red was cast to play it, then it has haste and it gets 1/1 counter.
Hmm.
No,
something like that. It has haste.
It's if black was spent, you zombify a creature.
Yeah.
If red was spent, all of your creatures get +2/+0 in haste. Do both if both were spent.
Yeah. It's torrent something. I can't remember the name of it.
Oh.
Torrent of Flames?
Yeah, because I have, I have the, what are they called? The Mangara Raiders, the blue one. If you have a green or black permanent in play, you can cast it from your graveyard.
Oh,
that one.
The River Prowler.
Mm-hmm. The River Prowler. Yeah, and other odds and ends, but it's just tough to find certain color combinations.
Well, not every color is designed to be reanimation, so
yeah.
I think that's just...
But, like... Green's got, like, Genesis.
Yep.
Ewit.
Squee.
Yeah.
You could play
Squee. I am playing Squee. I'm also playing all the Phoenixes.
If you're playing Squee, you have to play Mog Cannon.
Mm-hmm.
And Goblin Bombardment.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's
Goblin,
awesome.
And Goblin Grenade.
That's such a slow engine, though. Especially with Goblin Bombardment.
I know,
sacrifice
still,
it, get it back, cast it.
I've always liked Raid Bombardment. It's in my cube because you could make a token deck and kill somebody with Raid Bombardment.
Yeah, it's a goblin barbarian. It's a mine. It's a bunch of goblins attack a bunch and then go, oh yeah, finish you off. I'm going to sacrifice all my goblins.
Or they go to board wipe you, and in response you just sack everything. board wipe your board. You can take 10. How's that sound instead?
Yeah, I got unburial rites in there. You know, all the different types of reanimate cards except reanimate.
Yep.
And life and death.
Yeah.
They're just too expensive. I have Exhum in there.
I think you need to give in and just put the classic reanimator spell, reanimation spells in that cube.
It's just too fast and broken. Everybody would go after black.
Yeah, it's hard to balance the colors.
Yeah.
I mean,
a reanimation cube is going to be semi-powered black.
Well, it doesn't have to bring something back from the graveyard. Blue does something. Was it blue? Just play more flashback cards in blue because they deal with the graveyard.
I was thinking about playing Torrent Elemental.
Yeah.
And stuff like that too, but I don't know the rulings on how the Torrent Elemental works in like a draft situation. If you can actually call or cast from your sideboard the Torrent Elemental, or is
it's cast from exile.
It's
you put it into play from exile. You're not casting it.
Yeah.
So you can't do it that way. Like it's not, it doesn't trigger any of your cast stuff. It's just an ability that you can activate from the exile zone.
Because it has been played in the thing. It was in the sealed format a while ago.
I never saw it firsthand how it was played.
It's one of those cards that people necessarily go, oh, I'm gonna, you know, first or second pick that in draft because it's just it's not.
I mean, I would. It's a 3/5 mana flyer that taps down
but
all
usually,
of the blockers.
Yeah, but usually there's something.
I first pick that. That's a bomb.
But yeah, usually there's. Oh yeah, like you can center the blue part of your graveyard on flashback cards.
Yeah.
Because it still deals with the graveyard. You could center the red part on flashback cards because it still deals with the graveyard. Flashback fills in a lot of gaps for graveyard
creatures. I've thought of that too, but
you
also want a creature. Well, the thing is also I need to be somewhat creature intensive too.
Well, yes.
Because red, like flashback is great, but you're also looking for like card economy and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
But
that's what you can get like passing flames.
Yeah.
And get everything flashback.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, if I'm playing black green mill,
mm-hmm.
or black green dredge myself. You play a lot of flashback cards because it works well with milling your own deck.
Yeah. Plus, I'm going to be getting the new Jace for it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
His -2 ability.
Yeah, it definitely needs to be in there.
Plus, his actual ability loot, so you fill your graveyard.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I would be playing a lot of looters.
Then that one red trap card? No, not that one. I was thinking of the one where you draw all those, if you take damage equal to the number of cards in hand.
Yeah.
But that wouldn't work.
Yeah.
So, that's basically been my week. Selling off a lot of my boxes of Magic cards.
I thought we weren't letting that out because of the
no, she doesn't listen, so that doesn't matter.
All right, okay. Just so we're keeping this.
Suffice to say, my partner, we'll just say he's my partner. He got arrested in Honduras. He works on an oil platform. he called me up and said, we're getting rid of half of our boxes of Magic cards. So me and him have collected every 2 weeks during pay period, we pitch in $100 or so, buy a box of Magic, stow it away. We started in the Time Spiral block and just went from there. And we stopped right around the Ravnica block, because that's when he went down to Honduras and became an underwater welder for the oil company.
Yeah.
So, yeah, suffice to say, he sold off half of it to this one guy. He gave us $30,000 for it.
But you're getting money for that.
Yeah, he decided that he's going to take about half of it out. We want to start a store, but...
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Where do you put a store?
I don't know yet. We wanted to put it in Dickinson, North Dakota, but there were too many bylaws.
Yeah, the bylaws and stuff.
So we sort of got screwed on that. So this guy was really weird about it. He didn't want any Time Spiral. He didn't want any of our Cold Snap.
Yeah.
He wanted all our Kamigawa stuff. Yeah, the whole Kamigawa block he wanted.
He knows that set sucks, right?
The legendary lands in there.
There's a lot of legendary stuff.
There's a lot of legendary stuff in there, but...
Yeah, you took... Well, you got the legendary
and top,
stuff.
Which is an uncommon.
It's not the best set in the world, though.
No, it's not, but, I mean, there's, like... I don't know how many, whatever number of boxes there are, but it's... With... You open up 2, 3, 4, 5 boxes, you can get enough...
I suppose you're good enough.
Yeah. Deal with a lot of things.
And then you got Kiki Jiki. You've got, what is it, those... There's a bunch of those legendary lands that are at least
$8 to $10
a piece.
And the one legendary I've always wanted to use as a general, but I can't because it's an enchantment.
Mm-hmm.
The legendary enchantment that turns a land into a... You put it on any land you want and becomes a creature.
Ganju of the whatever...
Ganju of the legendary, the master of all the Ganju. I've always wanted to build around him.
I've seen... Like a house rules deck where they're like that when that comes into play it's a creature. It's like it's never an enchantment. It's always like it comes in and makes a creature and they let him do it.
I really think that there should be a special ruling on that card. Because that card is really that card makes for an interesting deck. If you could actually build that legally, just think of all the cool cards you could throw in with it. The Titania chick would be amazing with that.
He also took the 2 revised boxes. That was our big hit.
Oh yeah, because of all of
We had 2 boxes of revised that we got. That was like the first part of our collection.
We
gave him a list as to what he would want.
Oh yeah, Legacy, that, you know, it doesn't surprise me. Now that I think of it, if he's from Honduras, it doesn't surprise me as going for the Kamigawa stuff because...
Well, this guy's, he's out in, I forget what state.
Oh, because I was say, if it's a foreign, someone foreign... They go after a lot of that older stuff because most everyone in the United States knows that Legend, or what is it, Vintage and Legacy just aren't real formats in the United States anymore. But once you go overseas, Vintage and Legacy are the bigger formats, actually.
Well, yeah, because a lot of that stuff is cheap up in those
countries,
too.
Vintage Legacy is actually bigger worldwide than it is in the United States.
But yeah, that was the other part. Yeah. He basically mouthed off to an officer. It was that he didn't know was an officer.
Oh wow!
The company ended up paying for his bail, but he had to pay back the company right away.
Yeah.
So.
Well, the company's $15,000 comes missing. The higher ups are wondering where the hell that came or why it's missing.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was pretty much my week.
Yeah. Brandon, what do you do this week?
What have I done this week? Just slowly working on my cube. I now have every card that I currently possess sleeved. Yeah, so I'm only missing like 60 cards.
What are you sleeving with? Penny sleeves or?
Double sleeving.
You're double sleeving penny sleeves?
No, it's Prophets on the inside and then Dragon Shields.
Your Dragon Shield, your entire collection. Holy crap, that's expensive.
Seven boxes is like $70 in sleeves.
But then again, I should talk. I have a game called Legendary, and my entire Dragon sleeves.
BCW.
my Legendary is in Dragon sleeves. So yeah, that's a good 500-600 cards, all sleeved.
Oh, it's like. Like my one game that I just bought, that game is stupid too because I want the promo cards for it. There's like 4 or 5 promos. Sheriff of Nottingham. There were, I believe, 4 or 5 promos. All of them $20 and up for the promo card.
Yep, they're all expensive for the promos. It's like that in Dice Masters too. All your promo Dice Masters cards are really expensive.
Yeah, I couldn't figure that. Yeah, that one. Well, there's a reason for the one. The Black Widow, because she's actually used in tournament play.
Yeah. But. Yeah. Anything else you do? Besides like getting you hooked on a game that you had to buy right away?
No. I mean, we played it and I didn't.
Played one game of Zombicide and he ordered it. You already ordered it and gotten it?
I ordered it the next day.
Ordered it the next day?
No, it wasn't the next day because I'd order it Thursday.
Yeah, ordered it Thursday and got it.
I ordered it Thursday.
Zombicide,
game's fun.
It is. It just depends on, like I said, Zombicide is one of those games. It depends on who you're playing with.
Why do you think our playgroup is? Why do you think our tabletop game group is so small? We don't let anyone join.
It's okay. I bought the game after playing with someone who was a terrible player.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
it was so much fun that despite the fact that
yes, we had that one guy. Yeah, we had a guy in our group when we were playing Zombicide. My character sat in the blue the whole game. I sat in the blue, and the thing is with Zombicide, when you progress on whatever scenario you're on, you ideally want everyone to be on the same threat level the whole way. So like you'll stop and kill zombies on purpose so people can get their level up. I decided to be the point man when we were playing, so I was covering everybody's six the whole time, but everyone else would kill the zombies before I had a chance to do anything. So I stayed in the blue the whole game, and we finally hit a level where everyone else was in the yellow or orange, and I was still in blue, and I could get to one checkpoint that I could have grabbed to get 5 more experience to jump me into that next level. And then right after that, he came up behind me and then just took it and completely hosed me. So I had to wait, we had to actually purposely spawn more zombies and risk blowing the whole scenario just so I could get into that zone.
Yeah, it was...
It was like, just dumb.
He made it his personal mission for some reason to
end get the highest kill count.
He wanted the highest kill count and the highest experience points.
Yeah.
At the end, whenever we ended the scenario.
Yeah.
Despite it, every time we were like, you are almost like, it's like you're blue. It's like you're the higher blue. If you wait a little bit,
so we let people catch up.
Plus people, grabbed an objective, jumps into yellow.
Yeah.
And then he went on a killing. He kept killing stuff. He was killing 2-3 zombies
uh-huh.
a turn.
Yeah.
And then he was hitting the upper end of yellow, and we're like, dude. Calm down. Most of us are in the lower end of yellow yet.
Yeah.
Grabs another objective. He jumps us up to
and I, this is the whole time I was still in blue.
Yeah, he's still blue.
I get 3 actions while everyone else is moving like 4 or 5 actions.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's the only game that I played, and it's been, what, now a year and a half? 2 years since I played it?
Yeah.
We were sitting down at a table with 5 people.
Yeah.
4 hours.
Yeah.
But well, that, also, the table had...
I think
tiles about 4 feet across and about 3 feet deep.
Yeah, I think with the group that we have the tabletop games, we won't have that problem.
Yeah.
Like when we're at the fan zone though, and I set something up, and somebody just walks up saying, "Hey, can I play?"
Yeah.
You know, unless it's somebody you really don't like, you kind of have to say,
"You're a hater."
No problem. Mm-hmm. So, but I don't know. But yeah, that's what happened there. It was still fun though. We still died. I think later on we had someone get mad because I ended up having to kill him because he just didn't move to the end. He stood in the way of a flamethrower. I had a flamethrower.
It was our only chance to win.
Yeah, and it was our only chance to win, and he put himself in a position where if we would have tried to save him, we would have just failed. So it's like, sorry, you're gonna die. You're just in the way. You're gonna burn with everybody else, and you're gonna die. You know, whatever. You're taking one for the team. Not by choice.
But yeah,
so that happened too.
That's pretty much what I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I remember right, it's a cooperative game, right?
It is. But he put himself in a position where he could have helped out and gone to the end and made the zombies move a little bit so we had time to be ready for a strike to make it to the exit, but he decided to go right in front of the door where everybody was and stop there. So all the horde moved into that zone. It's like, yeah, now you're going to die because that's their only way of winning. And he got mad over it. It's like, yeah, that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But anyway, that's how that went. What did I do this week?
Played Zombicide.
I've been fielding a lot of questions about Dice Masters at the fan zone when I'm working, actually.
Mm.
Trying to get league stuff set up, trying to get organized play set up for that, and figuring out a time to get a demo officially for people that are interested.
You should get that set up on Monday. So
that's what I was thinking.
Awesome.
Doing a Monday demo. A Monday demo, I was thinking.
Well, I mean for our organized play
net. Yes, organized play net will probably be Monday. That's the plan.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's kind of what I've been doing with that. Magic-wise, I got my cube done. I realize there's stuff in it I still don't like, but I don't want to try switching it anymore. Because Origins is coming out.
Yeah, so
it's like,
Origins.
It's too good. There's so many good Origins cards come out, and we're going to go into that in the next section.
We've seen like 45.
Yeah, that's... I don't want to...
All of the uncommons already. Like,
yeah. Yeah, like, I just don't want to fix anything more, because I know I'm going to make a big change when Origins comes out. So I've been working on my cube, so that's as much done as I'm going to get it. I'm getting ready for it, amped up for this following weekend, because we're going to Fantasy Flight Games to hang out and play games. And then we're doing a Dice Masters draft on Sunday, which I'm looking forward to. And then, of course, we have our Friday game night coming up,
yep,
which I'm looking forward to. But other than that, I have been working a lot this week. Last night I worked at the Fan Zone for 4 hours, and then I had an hour off, and then I had to go work 10 hours at 10 hours on my night job at the group home. So I was up for pretty much 15 hours straight. We're at 15 hours on between two jobs. So
I used to work at a gas station and a motel at the same time.
Ugh. But yeah, so other than that, I've had a pretty lazy day. Father's Day has been great. The most energy I expended all day was driving to the Coburns to get a pizza and then coming home and eating and sitting in front of my TV and watching TV for 5 hours.
Best part about Father's Day is not having to deal with your own children.
Yes. My wife and kids were gone all day, so I sat in front of the TV getting into this new show called The Strain.
Yeah, I saw that. It's like
awesome.
It's like a borderline like zombie.
It's borderline zombie slash mutant alien thing. It's interesting. Kind of slow, but after you get into the show and what's going on, it's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's kind of what I've been doing. I'm going to let everyone knows what's happening. This is episode 50. This will be our last podcast for a while. Alex will go into how he's possibly going to bring it back later on.
Yep.
Later. We do have some news to go over, though. This article actually comes from, and I've been following this website for a while now, therealstanlee.com. It's Stan Lee's personal website.
Mm-hmm.
He writes editorials, and he finds articles and posts them, and he finds them interesting. This one happens to be a Magic article. I don't know who's familiar with the Pro Tour or anything when it comes to Magic, but there's a society called the Ladies Planeswalker Society. It's a grassroots group that started on Facebook, and they're actually starting to get national recognition. Most of your female gamers that are in the Pro Tour now are pretty much registered members of this new movement called the Ladies Planeswalker Society. It's a group that is solely designed to help to kind of promote and help women in breaking into the game of Magic the Gathering, or the game, you know, Magic and stuff like that. Because, I mean, it's when Magic started out, it was more of a guys' game. Like it was nothing but guys playing. This has been of dispute in the Magic community for a while. There's some guys that don't like having women playing the same game as them, and there's a lot of people don't care though.
There's a documentary on right now on, I think it's Netflix.
Yeah.
Called GTFO.
Yeah.
Where it talks about women gamers just in general.
Yeah.
It's a documentary about how the women gamer community
is getting bigger
and bigger, and there's just more and more problems coming along with it.
And you know what? And my only response to that is, I don't think it's the women wanting to play games that's the problem. I think it's the dickhead men involved that have a problem with it.
Oh, exactly. That's what it is. I mean,
I have no problem playing with women any game. Hell, I do it every Friday night. Alex's fiance comes, and we have fun playing games all night.
Yeah, she rips me apart, but it's fun.
Yeah.
She makes fun of me.
She wins most of the time.
Yeah.
And we don't let her win either. She's just really good. She's pretty good at gaming.
It doesn't matter what game we play.
She picks up the strategy right away all the time.
She picks up the strategy right away, and she always wins the first game.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. And the guy who knows how to play the game is like, how did that happen?
Yeah, no, she's really good. She's pretty astute at gaming, and she picks up on everything really, really fast.
Yeah, and she's got a competitive edge, too.
Yeah, she does. Mainly against you.
Yeah.
Like, if she has the option of hosing me or Brandon or Alex, she'll go after and hose Alex first. So it's like, for me, it's like, I'm not going to worry about it. She's going to go after whatever Alex wants anyway. I'm fine.
That's why I have never won a game of Flux yet, either.
So, but yeah. So I don't know. I guess my whole take on this, I think people need to just, there's guys out there that just need to get over the fact that women are joining the gaming community, and they're not going anywhere. So it's deal with it or GTFO.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean,
that's the thing with any group, like, that wants to do, like, that's just human mentality.
Yeah.
It just happens all the time. Like, things are changing, and I don't like it. They're not like me, I don't like them.
Yeah.
And it's just annoying.
I mean, it's great to have a different personality in the group.
I think the most ludicrous argument I've ever seen for it is someone made the argument that at their local game shop, whenever they're drafting, they have a hard time drafting against women. And they always end up losing when they draft against women because he has a hard time keeping eye contact on the woman. It's like, and I remember like I got involved in like kind of trolling that guy. And because it just really ticked me off, and my immediate response was, then maybe the problem's not her, and maybe it's just you.
Yeah.
Well, it's like my cousin's fiance. The guys, when she plays Magic, guys act completely different around her.
Yeah.
But also, she likes to stare at people, too. She thinks it's funny.
Yeah.
So it makes the player just, so she likes to mess with them.
Yeah.
She knows it works.
But no, it's just, to me, that argument's just stupid. It's like, no, the problem isn't the woman gaming. It's you not being able to recognize her as a player and not something to look at.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's your problem. That's not her problem. So, I guess it's a stance that I hold pretty close, because, I have a daughter, and she's already interested in gaming now, and she's only 5. Like, she's probably going to continue that desire to game. And you know what? If she ever comes back to me saying she's uncomfortable gaming because of somebody, I'm going to flip. Because it's just stupid. It's like, I don't see what the big deal is. They have... Everyone, no matter race, sex, religion, whatever, you have a right to game. It's not a big deal. Like, everyone is allowed to do it in this country.
Except power gamers. I don't like power gamers.
Power gamers are annoying. There's even a place for
everyone
them.
Everyone is excluded.
Yeah.
These people are assholes.
No, power gamers, they're just a special class of people. Actually, if you really think about it, that whole power gamer mentality only makes up less than 10% of the community anyway.
Yeah.
So it really doesn't even matter.
I like
You usually have one or two in a group, and everyone else is there to have fun.
Yeah, I just love it when you know who they are because they just get beaten by a little kid, and they just storm off ranting and raving and complaining.
Yeah.
It's like, really? It was this little kid. Show him the right ideal of how to play a game.
Yeah.
Not this.
Yeah. But plain and simple, women are joining the gaming community. This isn't a bad thing. This creates more people to play games with, keeping games alive longer. I mean, this goes all the way back to when Pokemon came out, and there was a lot of Magic players scoffing at Pokemon. And they're like, they're scoffing at Pokemon, and I remember telling these people, it's like, what are you worried about? Your Magic game continues because these kids are playing Pokemon. What do you think they're going to play when they get sick of Pokemon? They're coming to Magic from Pokemon. That's the normal trend. They play Pokemon or Yu-Gi-Oh! And then they start playing Magic. That's pretty much the going trend.
Mm-hmm.
Or they end up playing all three of them, but either way, they end up playing Magic, which brings more new players to the game. So the game stays alive. The game can't stay alive if the same people are always playing it.
Mm-hmm.
It needs a fresh supply of new gamers to keep a game alive. So,
that's true about all games. Anything that is, like, collectible, just like baseball cards and stuff like
you
that.
You need a new group of people buying all the time or getting into it, otherwise it dies.
Yep.
So.
And I don't see Magic disappearing anytime
soon. No.
No.
It's got it's got a like a very good storyline following.
Yeah.
I mean, people, there are separate...
That's about to get amped up to 9 degrees.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the new planes.
Going forward.
Yeah.
The new planes and stuff. Did they release Jace's...
That reminds me.
I think all five of them.
That reminds me. August, we're due to get the Magic the Gathering board game. I can't wait. I'm buying that.
Oh,
yeah. That looks super
and, that looks awesome.
And then
there's a lot more details on it. Like, you haven't heard anything else other than the original posting.
That looks awesome. I'm getting it.
And also this fall, the new line for EDH Commanders.
Yep.
There has been nothing released on it, but the only speculation people are saying is it's going to be two-color.
They'll probably do friendly two-color and then enemy two-color.
Yeah, and I was reading an article, I can't remember where, but they said they're not reprinting Command Towers anymore.
Nope, they're going to go up in price.
So Command Towers are, you know...
Mm, that's annoying.
Yeah, it is, because if you want two colors, you just put them in.
Well, I mean...
Or at least put them in one of the sets.
Well, here's the thing with Command Tower. Yeah, it's good in two color, but it's more important to have it in, like, three or five colors.
Yeah.
In two color, you can just make a special land for it.
Yeah.
That's
when it comes to collectible card games, the ones that seem to be still be strong is Pokemon and Magic. Yu-Gi-Oh! Seems to be falling. One of the new games that is getting put on the radar in Pokemon and with Pokemon and Magic that's getting put into that lumped in with the collectible card games that's gaining a lot of steam and getting close to there, obviously, is Dice Masters. But
kind of. I mean, Force of Will.
Force of Will is. But
that game is just
there's a lot of people. Yeah, there's a lot of people speculating that that's eventually going to fall off.
Well, I mean, it's a simpler version of Magic. That's all it is.
Yeah,
you've got a separate deck for your mana and another deck for your spells.
Yeah, you're basically your top four right now is Magic, Pokemon, and Dice Masters, and Force of Will are all gaining steam.
Mm.
I guess for me. Personally, I'm not a huge, like, I haven't seen Force of Will played, but I've read enough on it to realize that I can pretty much play Force of Will by taking a regular EDH deck and just pulling all the land out and then just making two decks.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is. So to me, that's not much different than Magic. To me, it's just a...
So that doesn't mean you get to choose whether you draw a land or a spell?
I don't know.
It's
broken it down.
It's set up like that, kind of. Yeah, so you choose if you want to draw land or spell that turn. It's, to me, it's just kind of...
lame.
Yeah, like,
One of the biggest things, and I've heard Mario talk about this several times, is they tried fixing the mana system with Kaido.
Yeah.
Because it's basically the same game as Magic, except for all of your spells can also be land.
Yeah.
Like... You can either play them or by tap. You play them just face up in your land zone, and you can tap them for mana to cast your spells.
Yeah.
Or you can just tap this mana and cast this spell instead of playing your land. And then what they found is it just made the games less fun overall.
Yeah, but and like for me as a Magic player who's been playing for 20 years, before I sold my collection, I had people saying, "Well, if you're bored with Magic, you can go play Force of Will. It's something different." And I kind of laughed at him. I'm like, what? It is Magic. We're just playing a different format of pretty much the same game.
Pretty much.
It's just kind of... It's like, yeah, that's not much changing my... I'm not really diversifying what games I'm playing all that much.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm kind of moving in a direction of really diversifying. So, but anyway, that's kind of that whole thing, kind of went off track or whatever. The article Breaking Boundaries. Really good article. Stan Lee's website, if you have a chance to read it, is really good. He has a lot of cool stuff on there. He's also hinted at a few things within the MCU universe when he's talking on there, when he writes articles. And, like, what was it? There was one article I was reading that was talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and he wrote it, and then the sentence followed behind that, he goes... A sentence followed behind that. I should probably be quiet now. He kept it in there because he was going into something that he wasn't supposed to say and talk about. So that's that, Owen. But here's the big thing, and this is on the Ladies Planeswalkers. If you're interested in checking out that page. We all have the link for Facebook up on there. But here's the big thing that everyone has been interested in, and this is the latest spoilers for Origins.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we want to talk about first? Isn't Sphinx's tutelage the big one?
Yeah, the Sphinx's tutelage is a cross between Jace's Erasure and Grindstone.
Yes.
One blue, two other. When you draw a card, target player mills two cards. If those two cards are mills two cards. If they are non-land cards and share a color, they do it again. And I think they keep on repeating the process, correct?
Yes.
Yes, they will repeat the because when they do it the second time, it's going to check again
yes. If
they share the color. And if they do again, then they will repeat the process
again. In a sealed format, that is broken.
Yeah, it was something really crazy stupid. I'm sitting there like...
Well, they're saying Monastery Siege is similar to it, too.
No, that's the thesaurus for it, saying that in conjunction with Monastery Siege, draw one, discard one.
Yeah.
If you choose, what is it, dragons.
I guess with my cube, I think I play lots of blue draw spells. I think Sphinx Tutelage and Brainstorm are meant for each other.
I'm going to Brainstorm and make you mill at least six.
At least six at minimum.
Okay, here's the other... crazy part about it is you can do it to yourself.
Yeah.
So, okay. I mean, if you can't get... You know what the top cards are. Let's say you're playing green, you got Sylvan Scrying. I know what the next two are.
Yeah, I think green... I think and as far as EDH is concerned, green, blue, black just got a really good graveyard card.
I mean, this card says, Hello, Cantrip. I am playing nothing but cantrips. Jeskai, I'm not sure if it's going to fit into a Jeskai deck.
Or what do you replace it with? What do you take out? Because Jeskai is already good.
That's the thing. What do you take out? Your three drop is the Ascendancy already.
Yeah.
It's tough. And it's like, okay, what do you do? What are you using for draw?
Yeah.
I mean, for mono blue, like for my mono blue wizards deck, that's going in my
Talron deck. It'd be even more absurd in a zombie deck.
Yep. Arcanist.
Yeah.
Gross.
It's just gross. Like, it's so good.
I mean, that one was just, I don't know why, but it just screams at me. The other part of its ability is one blue, five other, draw a card, then discard a card.
Yeah.
No one's going to use that.
Yeah.
Maybe an EDH.
I mean, in a control deck, it's not impossible.
Yeah, true.
Like, you just hold up your counter magic, and then they didn't do anything, so you trigger it. Because, I mean, I know I do it in my artifact deck with my loot house.
Yeah.
And that would be four mana. I mean, that's not... I mean, 4 to 6 mana is a big deal, but if I'm not spending my mana that turn, might as well draw a card and filter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's that? Okay, yeah, that card's, like, I just think it's good. Like, it's going on my cube. Like,
it's
but
right
then on. Again, I say that, and there's so many cards from this set that are going in my cube.
Yeah. It's one more than Jace's Erasure.
Yeah.
Jace's Erasure says whenever you draw a card, target player... Mills one? I thought it was mill.
No, it's you draw one, they mill one.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a one for one.
It's a one for one.
It's a one for one ratio.
Okay.
This is strictly better because it's two.
Yeah, I mean,
it also costs one more, though, so.
But it also has a great secondary ability.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just not milling two, you're milling
at least two.
Yeah.
And like I was saying, if somebody's playing a monocolored deck, that's just going to rip it apart real quick.
Yeah.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know what would be stupid in? An Una deck?
Oh, yeah, because Una's already gross. The Una needs another tool. Really? Really? Una needs another tool?
Then go into the new red board wipe, Chandra's Ignition.
Yeah, the card's good.
Flavor win on this one can actually ignite Chandra Spark.
Yes.
Because if you use Chandra, target creature deals the damage, so Chandra will deal at least 3 damage, I would assume. So it would flip her immediately.
Oh, wow.
You can play Chandra and she ignites herself off her card.
What's her casting cost?
5. It's 3 colorless red for a sorcery.
Yeah.
Which is an issue, but it says target creature you control deals damage equal to its power to each other creature and each opponent. Fun thing I thought of the moment I saw this card is a 10 powered infect creature.
You just win instantly! Oh my god, Skittles is stupid.
Well, I mean, you'd have to have Skittles in a black-red.
Yes, that's dumb. That, and black-red infect isn't that far off of the bandwagon of being alright. That's stupid.
Yeah, you just figure out a way to beef it up with some artifacts, and you got... You can do it mono... Well, you know, black-red.
That's like, I pay 5 mana, and this EDH game is over.
Mm-hmm. The funny thing is, whatever creature you targeted will live through because it's each other creature. So
I don't know. It's
from that one. So anything fun.
Dark Steel Colossus.
Yeah, there you go.
Blightsteel?
Blightsteel. Blightsteel Colossus. Red Felden.
Yeah.
Felden, Blightsteel Colossus.
For what is it? 8 mana?
Sure.
Why not? Doesn't know, because Blightsteel Colossus should never be in your graveyard.
Oh, that's right. If it goes to the graveyard.
You still throw it in.
But
I would, if I'm playing red artifacts, I don't care if Felden is, I made a red artifact themed Felden deck, I'd throw Blightsteel in that deck. Why not?
You pacify Blightsteel? That's cute.
That's cute. Watch this.
Yeah, any of the fun combat mechanics, like infect kills everyone, death touch will make sure your one powered creature will wipe the board.
Yeah,
lifelink is also silly.
Oh,
I like that.
I'm gonna gain a lot of life.
Is that an instant or sorcery?
Sorcery.
Just think of that one player at the board. That one player you're playing EDH with that is touting. I have 20 tokens in play. Ha ha ha. You're like, oh, this is going to be cool.
Right.
I'm going to hit everything for 5.
That's why I like my...
Turn 6, I'm going to play a Typhoid Rat and then make it blow everything up.
And I just gain a lot of life.
That's why I like my Siege Dragon with Nalia's bow out. So every time he attacks, deals 2 damage to all non-flyers.
Yeah.
And Nalia's bow gives... all my creatures death touch when attacking.
Yeah.
So it's like,
that's stupid.
Hi.
That's so...
We have Gideon. We have another new mechanic.
Oh, yeah.
We have the mechanic in this... the new mechanics in the set, which is Spell Mastery, which is going to be counting the number of instants and or sorceries in your graveyard.
Okay.
The card that it's got on is called Ravaging Blaze.
Okay.
It's a fireball effect, is what it is. It's red X, and it deals X damage to target creature. With Spell Mastery, if you have 2 or more instants and or sorcery cards in your graveyard, it also deals X damage to that creature's controller.
Oh, that is... No.
That's gross. Oh, wow. Another cube card. That's cute.
Yeah, uncommon.
Oh my god.
Spell Mastery could fill that some of your... other red things.
I think red blue. I think red blue EDH just got a tool.
Yeah, like Spell Mastery, that kind of thing. Depending on what other things have Spell Mastery. There's a Shock / Lightning Bolt that we'll talk about in a little bit. I mean, it doesn't hit players, but we'll get to Kytheon, Hero of Akros.
Yes.
We have the Gideon.
This is the Gideon we've been talking about.
Anyway, I was incorrect.
Yeah.
One drop, 2/1, with 2 colorless whites, gains indestructible till end of turn. And at the end of combat, if he and at least 2 other creatures attack, exile him and return him to the battlefield transport.
I want
to
break this with white weenie tiny leaders.
It's really easy.
Yeah, I know.
I was thinking about it. Freaking standard, you just play him on turn 1, you play turn 2, you play a Crowing Crusader, and then hammer hand him. I think that gives haste. So that plus the token with haste, and you attack on turn 2. And then you flip Gideon.
Hi, I'm Gideon, I'm here.
Or just raise the alarm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll flip him on turn 3. With The great thing about that is you're like, you leave up whatever mana for to protect him. You leave up your, like in standard, it'd be the one colorless, one white protection. And then you can protect him, but if they don't, you cast Raise the Alarm, and then you attack after you activate his indestructible ability, so he gets to attack in for free, and you can lose your two tokens who give the crap.
Yeah. Well, here's the weird thing on him. He starts out with his name's Kaitian, and then for some reason when he comes a Planeswalker, he renames himself Kaitian.
Yeah, apparently that is since he Planeswalks to Bant, he changes his name to be more Bantian.
More so, Bantian?
I don't know. I don't know how you'd probably
say it. Isn't it, aren't you that boy Kaitian? No, my name's Gideon.
Although I'm slightly annoyed with him, because I hate the fact that he doesn't have Battalion, but he has Battalion.
Yeah.
That annoys me to no end.
It's Battalion without... Yeah, it's dumb.
That could be said, Battalion, at the end of combat, exile him and flip him.
No.
Yeah.
Like, that's... I feel like that's exactly what that
uh-huh.
is.
Yeah.
And it's just... I get it. I had a talk with... Alan came in and we were talking about it today. I hated it also in Dragons when... There was that one card in Dragons, the uncommon, that could say creatures you control have prowess.
Yeah.
Because whenever you cast a non-creature spell, all of your creatures get +1/+1.
Yep.
So it could just give all of your creatures prowess and be the same card with less text on it. So don't make a keyword and then don't apply
and not use it
where it's applicable.
Yeah.
But I get it. It's a set. They can't use a keyword slot on Battalion. And put more Battalion cards in.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Dumb.
But we'll talk about, you can move on to the Gideon on the flip side.
Yeah,
Gideon is underwhelming the Planeswalker.
I don't know what you're talking about, because we must be reading different cards. Because this is Gideon Jura Reborn.
Yeah.
Comes in, flips at 3, +2, so it goes up to 5 loyalty the turn you flip him.
Yep.
And you can make something attack him, which is what Gideon did. It saves you life. You can make their big thing attack coming at Gideon. Or his other ability, also a +1. Until your next turn, target creature gains indestructible, and you untap that creature. So you get to attack in with your creature, and then leave it back as an Indo blocker to protect him anyway. Still going up. Both of these abilities go up. And then he turns into a 4/4 indestructible that doesn't dealt damage. Like, all of those abilities just scream awesome. Because Gideon Jura got played... Gideon Jura is getting played for that his +2 ability. That exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Except, I mean, it does more. It costs 2 more, or... This guy costs 1 and flips into this. But Gideon costs 5 and can make 13. So similar ideas, but I just think they're all insane.
I just don't see the applications. I mean, maybe once I see it played in, like, standard or in a EDH deck, then yeah. But right now, the way it looks, his flip ability is fairly simple.
Yeah.
To get off. I mean, if you play Boros, it's really simple. I mean...
Yeah.
There's so many ace outlets, it's just crazy stupid. But with the Planeswalker ability, what is it? Turn 2, you might be able to have him turn into a Planeswalker. Or turn 3. But
turn 2/3, you have a 5 loyalty Planeswalker, or a 4 loyalty Planeswalker that's got an indestructible blocker.
Mm-hmm.
And his 0 is his ultimate. Really?
Well, Gideon's always had that issue. Like, Gideon's zero. Always had... All 3 Gideons now have had a 0 where he turns into a creature. It was a 6/6.
Yeah, but this one is the ultimate, technically.
It was on...
Jura, oh, yeah, I suppose it was.
It was a +2, a -2, and a 0.
Yeah, that's right, it was.
This one's it's a +2, a +1, and a 0. So there's not even a minus on this guy.
So he becomes a 4/4 indestructible.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Doesn't take damage.
Does he consider, once he's removed and comes back in, does he have... summoning sickness, or can you attack with him?
He follows the same rules of lands.
He would not be able to attack to the turn you flip him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. To be fair, he's already attacked to the turn you flip him.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were to have an extra combat, you couldn't activate him and attack.
Yeah.
Because he does leave play
and come
and
back in.
Back. So he has a new entity to the game.
It's at the start of that turn 3 when he has already been in play for a turn that he can turn into a creature and attack. It follows the same rules as a land.
Yep.
Or a permanent that's been out for a while.
Yeah.
So.
I was just wondering on that, because it's like, okay.
Yeah, so that's how that works.
Yeah, Gideon, I mean, early game, you can really start taking off, but anything after that just seems very underwhelming.
Yeah.
I mean, just to me, he passes all of the planes, like, he passes all of your typical planeswalker tests. He's one cheap with one mana. The two can help you win the game. The fact that he turns into a 4/4, that's a 5-turn clock. Mm-hmm. A very hefty clock. And you've already attacked with him as a creature and two other creatures at least, so they've probably taken some amount of damage.
Yeah. And then
he protects you and protects himself.
Yeah.
In all three, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just find it funny because if you start flickering your planeswalkers out, they just become the creature again. Especially with Jace. I was thinking about that the other day. Jace's ability, flicker him out, do his ability, becomes a creature. You can do this every turn. It would be only on your turn. Beginning of your turn, make him a planeswalker, use his ability, flicker him out, have him come back in as a creature. And you never, I mean, as long as you're not worried about using their alts, you can practically do it with all of them at a certain point.
Yeah.
Especially like with Nissa, which is stupid because of Nissa's ability.
I have to say, out of all five planeswalkers that they've, out of all five now that they're spoiled, I like Nissa better. I, like, when I look at Nissa as far as planeswalkers beating commanders, I think Nissa actually makes and gives me more interest as a planeswalker, or as a commander, than Chandra, Liliana, Jace, or Gideon. I find Nissa really interesting as a general and commander.
I just wish she wasn't a Borderland Ranger. Like, that doesn't excite me at all.
Yeah, I can see where that part. But like, I just like everything she does because there are some stupid things you could do once she becomes a planeswalker in green.
I think they were awesome. Designed for, like, tiny leaders or...
Yeah.
Or not so much tiny leaders, but for EDH purposes, just because of the way they're designed. They're not designed to go off very fast.
Yeah.
And they're very circumstantial as to have to use them.
I think what they wanted to do was to make sure all five of them were viable in, like, standard. That's why they're all so cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And their flip cuts are relatively cheap and easy.
Yeah.
Is because I think they wanted to make sure that since this is their big reintroduction of all of these characters or whatever, to make sure that they all got their light in the thunder while they're in standard.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're going to make special tokens that you can just put in your deck for them.
I'm sure they will. They have
I'm
to,
pretty sure they're going. They will. I think they're going to be like, and I hate this. I hate saying this because I really don't like the fact what.
There's something here.
Oh, that's my mark from my bio life.
Well, there was a spider that rolled under your armpit.
There's a fly.
Better not be. I hate spiders. You're gonna freak me out. You're gonna freak me out the entire.
There was a fly flying.
Okay, good. Because if you say spider, I'm gonna spend the rest of this recording looking for the spider. God, I hate spiders.
Best episode ever.
God. Anyway, I like. What was I talking about? Nissa.
Yeah.
No, out of all the five planeswalkers, I like Nissa better. I really like all her interactions, what she does in green. I think there's a lot of cool stuff you can do in mono green with her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I have to say, out of all the mono colors I've played, I actually, when it comes to EDH, I enjoy mono green EDH better than all the other mono.
I mean, she's the most viable for, like, other, I think, other sets, as well, or other, like, in modern, because mono green devotion, like I was telling you guys before, is slowly taking off.
Mm-hmm.
And it just takes a certain number of cards, and I think Nissa might be there just to filter out lands.
Yeah. She makes a really good filter.
Because you're not really looking at a lot of non-basic lands when you come to mono color.
Yeah.
So.
We can move on to the new Elf Lord.
Yes.
Gwen
Dwinnen Giltleaf Dane.
Yes. Two colors, green for a 3/4 with reach for an elf warrior. Other elf creatures you control get +1/+1. And whenever she attacks, you gain 1 life for each attacking elf you control.
So basically, they took a Priest of Titania and made it a warrior.
No, this is what's his name? Riss the Redeemed. Not the Redeemed. The Exile. This is, like, the exact ability on him. Except for he doesn't... This one checks attacking elves.
Yeah.
Riss the Exile that checks whenever Riss attacks.
Yeah.
You gain, like, 1 life for each elf you control.
Yeah.
Which makes it stupid because you can just play... It's starting to come down to the point where you can just play Elf Lords. Make a deck out of Elf
yeah,
Lords.
Just play nothing but Elf Lords. Like, play like... I think we have like, 10 to 15 Elf Lords now?
Something
silly. So you can just play 10 to 15 Elf Lords and just play play value elves for the remainder?
Yep.
Yeah, just play like your Elvish Visionary and your...
Whatever. Yeah.
But, yeah. I think, and on that note, I think this is deliberately 4 mana... So you can't collect a company yet.
Probably. That makes sense.
Yes.
Card's so broken.
Very deliberately 4 mana.
Card is so broken.
Yeah, I can believe that now. I was like, why did they make it 4? It wouldn't fit into Outfall. It's kind of high end for casting cost. But I guess.
Yeah.
Then I'm like sitting there like, well, they're not really concerned about the Outfall in Standard. Yeah, that makes more sense than anything now. I was trying to figure out why it was 4. But yeah, I mean...
I guess looking at... Because they still haven't released what our other non-legendary plane... Our other legendary creature is.
Yeah, we don't have the black one.
We don't have the black one, but looking at the 4 they revealed already out of white, blue, red, and green, I think red is actually looking the strongest right now.
Oh, Pia?
Pia and Kieran Nalar.
Yeah, 4 mana. It's 2 colorless, red for a 2/2. When they enter the battlefield, you put 2/1/1 colorless Thopter artifact creature tokens with flying onto the battlefield. 2 colorless, red, sacrifice an artifact. It deals 2 damage to target creature player.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, my artifact deck, super excited for this card.
Yeah, like, I think it looks stronger than so far out of all of them. Like, green doesn't interest me, the blue one really doesn't interest me. The white one is. Kind of meh.
I don't even remember. That's the O-ring guy.
It's an O-ring guy. It's just play the 3 drops and call it good. This is a 5 drop that has to. The creature has to deal damage so you can actually play him. This.
Yeah.
No. And our blue one is just another one of those sphinxes where you have to guess or whatever.
No, it's not guess. You have to look.
Yeah.
In each of your opponent's hands.
Him I actually like. Him I like for commander.
He would be. He's just hilarious.
I think
his
casting cost is too big.
Yeah, he's a sphinx, so that's what sphinxes are.
Yeah.
But, yeah, 5 colorless blue for a 5/5 flying sphinx. And as he enters the battlefield, each opponent reveals his or her hand. You choose the name of a non-land card revealed this way. And then your opponents can't cast spells with the chosen name.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to Meddling Mage, but you get to know what everyone has before you Meddling Mage.
Yeah.
And you get the bonus as if... You get to see, is there a card that is in multiple people's hands?
I guess for me, if I was building a deck and I had to use him, I would probably fit him into a green, black, blue graveyard deck and just mill myself out and reanimate him instead of casting him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's a 7 drop.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, being able to throw him in your graveyard and just reanimating him seems like way more value than actually trying to cast him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
But this is, yeah.
And the white one is just lame.
The white one is like, what?
We can move on to my favorite card that's been foiled so far, like other than Gideon. Gideon. Elemental Bond. It's Garuk's Pack Leader on an enchantment. 2 colorless and a green. Whenever a creature with power 3 or greater enters the battlefield under your control, draw a card.
That's cool.
I'm super excited for this card.
I think they did that with every color. They did that with every color now.
Yeah.
Because blue's got
tutelage.
Now this one.
Yeah.
I think they're probably going to do the same thing they did with the sieges of dragons. It would. it seems like they're following that path right now. Because, yeah, they're both the same casting cost. They both have weird abilities.
Oh, my God.
So.
Fiery Impulse is so awesome.
It's okay. It doesn't hit player, which is upsetting.
Still, like the spell mastery, it gets to be a lightning bolt.
Mm-hmm.
In a red-blue limited deck, that is freaking amazing.
Oh, you know where this is going, though. Delver.
Yeah, definitely. That's so easy to pull off in Delver.
I mean, this is your creature control right there.
Uh-huh.
For your Delver
decks. It's hard to justify going in Delver when you have Lightning Bolt, and Lightning Bolt is just strictly better than this card. And I think I'd rather play Shock than play this card.
But for those people who don't have the money to buy, like, Lightning Bolt...
Yeah.
I mean, I know where you're getting
Lightning Bolt's like $3.
Yeah,
the economy's not that bad.
Well, I'm under 18 and I don't have a job.
I suppose. Yeah, never mind. Yeah.
Exactly.
I'd rather play Shock than play this card, I think.
Because it hits the player.
Shocks are still... What?
They can't be
a quarter. They're
There's
a quarter.
No way a Shock is more than 50 cents.
They are a quarter because they've been reprinted so many times.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay.
And, like, you don't get the bonus of it being 3 damage sometimes, but you get the bonus of it can hit the player all the time.
And, yes, the reason why I know it's worth a quarter is because every time I work at the fan zone, mm-hmm. it is the most common card that I have to look for because somebody wants one. Mm-hmm. So.
But then there's Patron of the Valiant. 3 colors, white for a 4/4 flying angel. And when it enters the battlefield, you put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it.
Wow.
Archangel of Thune.
Yeah.
You have a friend.
Yeah, you have a partner in crime.
Yeah, this is crazy.
I mean, you can do the Thune feeder combo with this.
I still like Reeb's Soul. I think that card is great. I love the idea of having a two drop removal spell in black in a 2-drop spot.
It's not
that
a removal
isn't
spell. It's just destroy target creature.
That isn't... Oh, yeah, sorry. A creature destruction card at a 2-drop cost at instant speed, that isn't so exclusionary. Like, the only exclusionary...
I mean, that's a pretty big exclusion.
It's a sorcery, dude.
The only Oh, it's a sorcery. My bad.
Yeah.
But the only... It's. I still like it. Yeah,
too.
I still like it because it's only 3 or less. Power 3 or less. Like, your big... Like, for 3 or less, your big creatures that are 3 or less are always utility creatures that your opponent's using to abuse.
Yeah,
it gets rid of
point,
those.
At that point, it's the fact that when you're casting a removal spell, you want it to be a tempo play, where you're spending less mana to kill the thing than they spent on casting it. And typically the things you're killing that have 3 or less power aren't going to cost more than 2 or 3 mana, so you're not gaining a lot this way.
Yeah.
Whereas Doomblade, they can cast their 10-drop, and then you can Doomblade it.
Yeah. I still think if it's a pretty good creature kill spot, creature removal spot.
It's going to have its own
move. Yeah. Of course, the Eyeblight Assassin, I still like that card. Mm-hmm. Eyeblight Assassin's good.
And I think the last one that's new that we haven't talked about is Zendikar Incarnate.
Is it artifact, or what is
no,
it?
No, it's an elemental. It's 2 colorless, red, green, so you have a gold,
oh,
uncommon.
Where is...
Oh, wow.
Gold uncommon in a core set. Zendikar, it's a star 4, by the way. Star power.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
Its power is equal to the number of lands you control.
That's cool.
Whoa.
So it's probably always a 4/4 for 4.
Yeah.
That gets bigger.
You can do a lot with that, actually.
Holy crap. They brought me here right back.
Oh, yeah,
Meteorite's back! I still like Veteran Sidearm. I think the card's amazing.
Hey, I won a draft with Meteorite.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I was top decking. The guy was at 2. I was at 5. All he had
you Meteorited him?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's like, I kill you with a Meteorite.
I'm going to say this again. I think Veteran Sidearm is awesome because I like Leona and Scimitar.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, we're getting another one that just costs one more. that still isn't that bad.
Yeah.
Like, Bonesler, Leonin, Scimitar, and this, that's awesome. That's so cool. I love it.
I'm starting to like the Deadbridge Shaman.
Yes.
The one black, two other, 3-1 elf. It's an elf shaman that if it dies, target player discards a card.
Yep.
Oh, wow, that's really good.
It is or target opponent amazing in any... It's amazing in mono black Sidisi.
So, I mean, there's
it
a...
It sounds like we're going to get a lot of, like... Because there's already two black elves in this set, so if we're getting green black elves as an archetype, that could make so much more... Like, I've always tilted on doing green black elves.
Just to do it?
Yeah, just to do it, because there's a lot of cool black elves.
Yeah, Nath.
Yeah, Nath, and then there's an, a tribal enchantment that's like whenever one of your non-token creatures dies, you get an elf. So it's just like... I've always wanted to just go down that route.
You have to include emo elf if you make this deck.
Which
and you have to get the legendary version of Emo Elf because it's awesome.
What is Emo Elf?
Emo Elf is a one drop green elf that you tap it to make one black mana.
Oh,
out of, what was it?
Elves of the Shadow?
Elves of Deep Shadow. Elves of Deep Shadow. You can go get the Ravnica one that has the new artwork, but if you get the original artwork of Elves of Deep Shadow,
okay.
It looks like an emo human. It does not look like an elf.
What set is elf? Of
it
the
wasn't legend.
It's Apocalypse, I think.
No, legendary, the Legends, or something like that. It was the Darker Legends.
Let's look it up.
Yeah,
yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's something stupid, crazy good though, and I was like, I might because they didn't they do that with all the elves? Like two of the elves.
Yeah, there's
There was one that was able to produce red and one that was able to produce black.
It was in the dark as an uncommon, and the artwork on the card does not that is amazing because it does not look like an elf. It looks like an emo human. It looks like an emo person dressed as an emo.
What is it called? Elves of the
Elves
dark?
Of the Elves of Deep Shadow, right here. I love the artwork on that card because it's been commonly known as the emo elf. That's what everybody calls it.
I don't know, but
it's awesome.
Yeah, if there's enough new cool black elf stuff, like most of the reason I haven't splashed black in my elf deck is because it just ends up being mono green with like one or two black things.
Yeah.
Like it was never
for value.
Yeah, it's like it wasn't enough and it was mostly just playing black for the spells, not for the elves.
Yeah.
So it's just like, well, whatever.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. But I mean, I will move to green black elves in a heartbeat. I always wanted to build Advent elves because I thought that would be amazing.
Well, that'd be cool too, actually. There's a few white elves that are really solid.
It's just like what white elves are there that are of importance?
Well, there's the 3/3/4 with vigilance that I really like. The hybrid one. You would also gain Risk the Redeemed.
Yep.
And you could play Risk the Exile.
Yeah.
The two of them together would be insane.
Oh, God, yeah. Both Risses in the same team. Definitely.
Who would be your general, then?
I don't know.
That's the thing.
As far as Abzan goes, it'd probably just be the Abzan Dragon.
Or,
You could play What's-Her-Face, the causes
or,
all...
Or Caridor.
Caridor? Just bring elves in all day long. Yeah, that'd be sweet.
Oh, you killed them? That was fun.
That's fun. It's back. Because they're all cheap anyway.
Yeah.
What's the one? Anafenza.
Anafenza you could play.
Anafenza. Make my elves bigger.
Make them bigger, and your opponents never get to reanimate again.
Yeah.
I feel like that would just get me killed because it's Anafenza and someone would be playing graveyard.
Oh, people hate Anafenza. I used to hate out Anafenza when I was playing a graveyard deck.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I feel like it'd be the same thing where I sat down with Caridor. Like,
yeah.
Let's play Caridor, guys. No! It's not what you think.
It's elves. It's worse.
I'm not going to spend the first few turns filling up my graveyard. I'm going to spend the first few turns filling up my board.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like mana, more mana. It's turn 5, I have 20 mana to my disposal.
Just for good measure, you get to play whatever it is. Each player loses life and you gain X life.
It's like that stupid...
Exsanguinate for amazing.
I would get an Exsanguinate Fireball with my elves.
Yeah, you would get Exsanguinate with elves.
Oh, you... Because
you can pull off infinite... If you get the right elves out, you can actually make infinite mana loop happen with that.
I played...
Staff of Dominance and an elf that taps for 4 mana?
Actually, there's a combo for it. My friend Peter used to play an Elf Ball EDH deck, and it makes infinite mana.
My least favorite right now is somebody, 2 weeks ago, played Teemer Elves. And Rite of Replication, a Priest of Titania.
Wow.
Yeah, so, yeah, there's...
That's a lot of life.
And he had a haste outlet. So, the first turn he did it, he had 20 mana to his green mana to his disposal, and was able to use it.
And you know what? This is why people always ask me, why do you hate Nissa Ravain so much? Because elves didn't need a planeswalker.
Now they have two.
No, they have three. They have two.
They're
stupid.
Specifically, that deal with the tribe.
Yeah. Elves
I'm still upset that the other two, that neither of the two newnesses have anything to do with elves, other than she is an elf card.
Yeah.
It's just upset me.
She's more, the thing is, she's very nature-based.
Yeah. I like this.
She's more about the land than her people.
Although I really want the green-blackness set, because I think that will be amazing.
Yeah.
Because in her lore, she already dabbles in black magic, because of the black elves on Morrowind.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
She has learned black magic. She just hasn't used it in a card yet.
Yeah.
I wanted to reanimate an elf. That'd be so cool. Like, one of her planeswalker abilities is reanimate.
Bring an elf from your graveyard into play. That's great.
Reanimate lands that come back from the graveyard as a creature.
Yeah. That's just crazy.
Zombie elemental.
Yeah, but I think as a whole, everyone here is pretty excited about Origins.
Oh yeah, I'm so excited for the set. Like, I might buy a couple boxes. I haven't wanted to buy a couple boxes of a set for a while.
I'm gonna wait until I'm gonna wait until Chatton just cracks our case, and then I'll just buy that stuff.
I already prepaid for 2 play sets of the Sphinx's Tutelage. I paid, $5 for 2 play sets.
Oh wow.
So
$5 for 8 of them?
Yeah.
That's not bad.
I mean, it was like $2.99 for...
I think it's going to become a very, very quick EDH staple.
I'm going to say it goes far.
Someone will probably build a deck around it. In Standard.
I'm thinking it might even be a modern sideboard card.
Yeah.
I think it's the perfect answer to mono decks.
Yeah, it'd be gross to bring in against the Moon deck.
Oh yeah, the burn deck's done. Like it's.
But you're just gonna lose.
Yeah, I think.
After you've lost
yeah. What is it? The Boros burn.
I think if you're playing mono red.
White spells or red spells.
If you're playing mono red and somebody goes turn 3 Dark Tutelage, it isn't out of character or understandable if you go. Well, let's start the next game.
You can try it.
Like. It's gonna get real hard.
Well, yeah, like the mono, like that Boros Burn deck that's out there right now. Some people are dabbling with Naya.
Yeah,
but I mean,
we got all even the green spells are red spells.
Yeah,
like so it doesn't match it up. They're all red spells,
and they're only running like 15 lands. So your chances of it going off at least twice are really good.
Yeah.
So, like I said, it's probably going to see some modern play.
Mm-hmm.
Or it dabbled in modern play.
Yeah.
Then when they find out it's really good, the foils are going to go through the roof.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just going to depend on whether it's good enough against the burn deck to justify spending the slot on a card that only hates out the burn deck.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, because if there's just other options, like in blue, you can just, what you got in blue? Like if you're playing mono blue, I don't know if you have.
See, if you're one thing about that card is if you're playing mono blue against another mono blue player, it's just a coin flip.
Yeah.
It's like who gets theirs out first.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to, and I mean it's going to be a 2-color or a 3-color deck.
Yeah.
It's going to have to run it, and it's going to be like an Esper control. I'm going to assume.
Yeah.
So or Jeskai. Where Jeskai could really manipulate it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty much all we really... Do we have any other cards that we're interested in Origins, or...?
That's all... We've not talked about, like, between last week and this week, I believe we've talked about every card that's been spoiled.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
and like I said, if the show goes back up, I mean, the spoiler release is going to... The mana base... They haven't spoiled any of the mana base yet that they're going to do yet.
We're technically not even in spoiler week yet. Like,
no, we're not.
We're supposed to start till like, next week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, like, these are all official spoilers, but they're trickling out really weird.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you look at all the speculations on the lands right now.
Mm-hmm.
What was it? They were going to do a full cycle of... The one speculation is dual lands without the land, basic land descriptors.
Or frenemies,
yeah. The other one is pain lands, but it taps for the color of your... it taps for one color already, but to produce the two other colors it does, you take one damage.
That'd be interesting. Take on
I've
the pain lands.
I've seen one on the spoilers that I go to with MagicSpoilers.com. They always randomly do like a real, or is this real or is this fake, and it's a card that they've seen. Like, they got Chandra right. Like, Chandra first showed up as a real or fake kind of deal.
Yeah.
Like, word for word, the correct card. But this one, it was a legendary island. This legendary land island comes into battlefield, taps for a blue mana. When it comes into play, you unsummon the creature.
Yeah.
If that's the case, that's awesome.
So, like, the idea would probably be spell lands.
It makes sense, because we are going back into Zendikar, and they did that.
Yeah, so it would be a legendary land that comes into play tapped with a basic land descriptor, and then is a spell attached to it. Some small, cheap, one mana spell or something like that.
Yeah.
That's crazy stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, the red one would probably be like a shock.
I don't know if shock might be too good, but it'd be like maybe deal one damage to target creature player when it comes into play.
Regardless, it's a legendary land.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be that overpowered.
No.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's a lot of speculations, and yeah. I'm hoping they do the mana base.
Honestly,
well,
it wouldn't surprise me. Honestly, it only would surprise me if we saw the frenemies.
The what?
The frenemies.
What is that?
You have the friendly lands, and you have the enemy lands. Like the Innistrad, when they did the...
The buddy lands.
The buddy lands.
The full cycle.
The buddy lands and the frenemies. I've heard people refer to the buddy lands that deal with the opposing types, call them frenemy lands, which makes sense.
Yeah. I don't know. I just always call them buddy lands, because one of the lands in play needs to be a buddy of theirs. So
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
I really do like the pain lands, the strictly better pain lands or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Those seem really cool.
And I mean, it's not that grossly overpowered either.
No.
And
you just have to... You would have to, in order to get the full cycle of 10, it'd be really weird.
Yeah.
Because there'd be two of each that tap for the 5 basics.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it would be, I would assume it'd be the shard on one with its allies, and then the wedge on the other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, like, the red one would be red with Naya, I think. I don't remember.
Yeah, red with Naya and...
Is red the center color of the shard?
Yeah, something like that. But
it would be red with Naya, and then it would be red with Jeskai.
No, it'd be green with Naya.
Yeah.
Because the two ends, like, it would tap for colors, and then the two colors it would tap for would be enemies.
Yeah.
Because it'd be the green on the activation, and then red and white for the pain.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, it would be the Abzan deck, I think, and so it would be black, and it would be green, and then black and white.
I know is they better, because after Dragons, that was such a lacking set.
Oh, yeah, this is a Feral of the Core set. This is going to be huge.
Yeah, so they're going to have to really make up for the...
They're
going to
do something spectacular.
Although, to be fair to Dragons of Darkir, I've never seen a third set shake up a standard environment as much as this did.
Yeah.
After this set came out, standard is an entirely different beast. Like, you cannot play a deck from pre-Dragons as...
It shook up a lot of formats.
Well,
Commander even got shook up by it.
It went from playing the wedges to the shards again. So, yeah, it was... I mean, a few people are trying to do... What was it? Sell Mardu token, which is failing horribly.
Yeah.
Boros token is actually doing somewhat well. But it's not even a tier 2 deck, but I've seen people play it. It's fast, but
at this point, if you're deck doesn't have a dragon as its finisher, it's probably not doing very well.
Here's the deck that in Standard just completely, back if you ever told me that this would ever be a deck back if, like, 10 years ago, I would have laughed. Esper Dragons.
Hmm.
That is the weirdest deck name I've ever heard. Because, okay, back in the day, if it was a dragon, it had red in it.
Yep.
It always had red in it. And then now, looking at the standard, where standard's at, like, one of the biggest decks is Esper Dragons. Nowhere in Esper is red. At all. It's the weirdest thing.
Oh, it's a tie for the win.
When Alan was in today, he's a guy who works at the Lumber Store. He said he was coming back from, I think he was in Tennessee.
Yeah.
He stopped off in Tennessee on a Friday. And he plays Bant Dragons. Oh.
That's weird, too. Like, any sort of dragons without red to me is just, that's so weird.
What he was describing the deck to me is just amazing, because it's, like, it runs the Deathmiss Raptor Den Protector package, because it's not a standard that's broken, and you can put it in any deck, and it just improves it.
Yeah.
But it's, Ojutai is his main win con, the Dragon Lord, because it's hexproof, and then you get to Impulse when it hits.
Yeah.
And the Mono White Ajani, which gives it +1/+1 Vigilance and Lifelink.
Yeah.
And also Kiora's Follower.
Oh my god.
Which untaps target permanent.
Oh my god, that's gross.
So he would attack with his Ojutai, draw a removal spell for targeting his Ojutai, tap his Kiora's Follower to untap his Ojutai to give it hexproof and physical spell.
That's dumb.
And he said he rolled into this town 4-0'd an FNM.
No one was ready for it, that's why.
He said two or three different times that night he got someone by attacking with Ojutai, and they're like, hi, finally, and then they try to downfall it, and he goes, tap Kiora's Follower, untap Ojutai.
It's dumb.
So it's like,
but
wow,
how can you do that if he's already considered a legitimate target?
That's an in response thing. You can,
but
in response
still,
do something.
No, because that's the basis of, like, Vines of Vaplet. Like, all of the cards, it's just give it protection or something in response.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
in response,
Vines of Aswood gives hexproof.
Yeah.
And that's just what it does. Like,
yeah.
Because what happens is your spell resolves first, and then their spell resolves, and then their spell couldn't have been a legal target anymore, so it fizzles the target and cancels itself.
I'm going to have to talk to a few people, because they use legal jargon on me that said it was the opposite.
No, it's an in response thing. That's all it is.
I knew I was right the first time.
Yeah, when someone tries to target your thing, if you give it hexproof in response, it will fizzle their stuff.
Yeah, and that's just a method of doing it. That's so dumb. Of course, no one is ready for it.
Yeah.
But that's from how much I've talked to Alan and stuff when we have our big events at the Fan Zone. He has the weirdest deck ideas, and they all work for some reason all the time.
Yeah. Well, he sees all of it. That's the thing.
I actually put Alan in the same group as I put our friend Shane. They think outside the box and they do janky weird things that nobody's ready for. And then they just always win because of it. Like
Chatting's the same way. I think
yeah.
My group too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing more terrifying than his blue red Purphoros deck.
Oh, I learned very quick playing against Chatten that you don't leave him alone for more than one turn because he's gonna break something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because in standard it was Ravnica Theros standard.
Mm-hmm.
He was playing a Purphoros deck that was red blue, and like with the weird, it's like Blister Coil weird and Frostburn weird at the same time, and Goblin Rally, which is 5 mana put 4. You know what was dumb? Turn 4 Purphoros, turn 5 ate you in the face.
Oh my god!
Ow! It was dumb, and that turn. That would give his Blister Coil weird a +1/+1, so he's attacking you for on the ground too.
That's dumb.
So it's just like he'd pressure you early and then finish you off with Purphoroses and shit.
I've played drafts with him too, and it's just
the amount of times I've drafted with Chatten and then pack 3, he just exclaims out loud, "I don't have enough creatures." is a large number of times.
Yeah.
Like I can't even put a number on it. It's just like
he's really good at drafting.
I should probably get some creatures sometime too.
Oh yeah, his draft concept. He actually was able to do a theme for the last M15. Oh, that was so stupid. It was just all Death Touch. He had Garruk, He had the Hornet's Nest. He had the Hornet Queen.
So yeah, he had this massive amount of Death Touch.
Yeah, it was Death Touch.
It was terrible drafting against him in the Ravnica block because the first pack was Guild Gates. That's all he grabbed in the first pack.
What one?
Guild Gates. Ravnica.
Oh.
That's all he would do is grab Guild Gates in the first round.
Well, yeah, because everyone wants them.
Unless it was a real bomb, he would just take Guild Gates.
Yeah, because everybody wants
them. And then in pack 2 and 3, he would take whatever he wanted because he had the fixing.
Well, yeah, you just hose. Yeah, he has the fixing for everything. on top of it, it's not a bad strategy because you really think of you drafting your Ravnica. You do have fixing for whatever you want to build, but you're also hosing everybody else at the same time.
Yeah.
Because you've got all the Guild Gates.
Your deck only gets marginally better with mana fixing. Like, if you had one Guild Gate in your deck, it's only marginally better.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but you also want... Well, the thing is, you want the answers. So you can say, okay, I can't take this card because there's no way I can get the mana fixing. But since he went early with it, it's like, I can play this.
Yep.
I can play this. I can substitute this for, you know...
Yeah.
This Guild Gate for a forest and still be able to possibly play it.
Yeah. But then he also did really well in the Gate Crash drafts when it was just the three packs of Gate Crash because that's when they put in the Gates Matter cards.
Yep.
And it was dumb. Because he still did that strategy where he just draft all of the Gates and then he would draft all of the guys that say when they come into play, if you have two or more Gates, do this. And it was...
That was a popper deck for a while.
Really?
Yes, it's a popper deck that you... It's a popper. It was a okay. Back when popper started, the classic popper started losing its flair. Standard popper became a format. Guild Gates, and right around Ravnica time, it became a theme thing. Standard popper. If you played that deck, you could not die because you basically you have two Guild Gates in play. What they do is they play the one where you gain 5 life, and then they play the one that kills creatures, and then they play the one that would make tokens. And all it was just playing them and constantly triggering this all over the place. And then it's like, oh, I'm really low on life. I'm going to gain 5. Oh, I don't like that creature. I'm going to do this. I'm going to kill your creature. You couldn't do anything. Like, you just flat out couldn't do anything.
And they were all 2/4s
or 2/5s.
Well.
Uh-huh, yeah. Like in popper, you just can't deal with that. Like it very quickly got put on the same caliber of it got put on the hate really really high on the hate meter, like the Locust Land, like counter. It got put in the same category as Counterpost. Like both decks were just hated.
Mm-hmm.
Like Counterpost, that's back when Counterpost was thrown. Everyone hated Counterpost because you just couldn't lose with Counterpost. Mm-hmm. And the Gate deck was the same way. You just couldn't lose. At all. You just didn't care. It was a matter of every game ended. Usually, you never finished. If you're ever playing someone with Gates, they simply won because your timer would run out on Moto. Because you just couldn't beat them at all. So, it was pain. Oh, it was just horrible.
We should get on to the main topic.
That's fine. It's the last show. We can kind of go over where we want tonight.
Oh, yeah, I suppose.
Or last show for a while. We'll get into that. Mm-hmm. Alright, so on to our main topic. Evolution, okay. This whole section, we're gonna go into where we started in episode 1 and where we kind of left, where we've gone. Kind of put general questions at some people. The evolution, my first question is going to be the evolution of the format in regards to episode 1 to now. Where did we start out in episode 1, Alex?
Where did we start out in episode 1?
What decks were we talking about? What was going on at that time?
Jeez. The decks that we were talking about were like Sylvan Primordial and Bant.
Yeah.
And how Sylvan Primordial was more of a...
Oh, the big argument.
Yeah, control piece. It wasn't so much the player that was the problem. It was the other people who could control it and manipulate it.
Yep.
By flicker effects and stuff like that.
Sylvan Primordial and all that, yeah.
So, and then it turned into Trasodon debate after...
Oh, yeah, Sylvan I remember having that. I remember that. The Great out of every show we did, the Great Trasodon debate was one of my favorite ones. Because this was my argument back then. We just had gotten done with the the first Primordial got banned because every time you attacked, you could search for land, right?
The Primordial Titan.
That got banned, Primeval Titan. That got banned. And then we had the Sylvan Primordial, and that card was good for a while. And then everyone's like, this needs to be banned. And then they banned Sylvan Primordial. And then after that got banned, everyone changed out Sylvan Primordial for Trastodon. And now everyone in the community was crying that Trastodon needed to be banned. My argument that I had, and I still stand behind, was where does it end? We just ban everything that's good to the point where we don't have anything left.
Mm-hmm.
And
it would just come down to the rules committee deciding where the field bads are too bad.
Yeah.
Like if Terastodon in their playgroup was getting abused like it is in most places, it'd get banned.
Yeah.
Like.
And then everyone would play Acidic Flame all the time.
Acidic Flame is better.
Yes. But this is the progression I was talking about. We had Primordial Titan, everyone had that, they got rid of it. But then we had the Sylvan Primordial. That got broken, everyone got rid of it. And then everyone was playing Trastodon, everyone was calling for that one to get banned. And for me, my big thing was, okay, we banned Trastodon, and then everyone plays Acidic Flame, and then Acidic Flame is played all over the place, and everyone gets sick of that one. And then that gets banned, and then
my favorite part doesn't end. My favorite part was when Primeval Titan was banned in EDH. It was like, oh.
Yeah.
They were just like hands up in the air. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
They didn't really care.
Yeah.
Because they still had the Sylvan Primordial.
Yeah.
Because if you were playing the Primeval Titan, you were playing the Sylvan Primordial too. So they're like, okay, we got this out. Then once they banned the Sylvan Primordial, it's like, now they have nothing. Then
Trastodon.
The Trastodon. Then they upped it by printing it in Conspiracy. So it was really easy to get a hold of.
Like the biggest reason for, if I remember reading the banning of Sylvan Primordial, was at the time, is it turned your average ramp deck into just the most insane ramp deck you've ever seen.
Because you're moving and ramping at the same time.
Primeval Titan did the same thing. Ramping into a prime time was insane.
Yeah.
Because it just turned your fair ramp deck where you got it out on turn, your 6-6 out on turn 4, which is fine. But then you're putting out an 8 mana spell on turn 6.
Yeah.
Or turn 4, or turn 5. Like, mm-hmm. You're putting 8 mana on turn 5, and then 10 mana on turn 6.
Well, they
out of hand. So
well,
fast.
There was some explanations for why they got rid of
I agreed with most of them.
Well, the reason they got rid of Sylvan Primordial was Ruin, the Bant general.
Yeah.
Where you could remove him from the game and bring him back.
Yep.
I mean, it gets crazy fast.
And I remember that's when we were still playing EDH League at the other store, and we had a player that would use that, and he would do a turn five lock everyone out of the game by destroying everything.
Yeah, I've always been like, this is my stance on the whole, like, if you want to play a flicker deck, just play Brago and play blue white.
Yeah.
Because once you move into green and you play Ruin, it's just unfun.
Because
the green Enter the Battlefield triggers are so powerful.
Yeah.
Just across the board. Just so powerful.
Yep, and you get, and unlike the blue-white one?
Mm-hmm.
Brago, you just activate it by tapping on that land. Mm-hmm. Or Brago actually pushes the game forward because you have to actually hit somebody for damage to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I used to play against Brago. I used to play against Rune decks where the people weren't even trying to win. They were just trying to just make literally, I think, this is back at the old store that we used to play EDH League at. I remember talking to someone like, well, where's your win con? We haven't given up yet. That's how they were playing. They were legitimately trying to make everyone scoop on purpose.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
like, that is probably the most underhanded, douchiest way of playing EDH.
My personal favorite EDH deck to this day is my I Hate EDH deck.
I remember that.
It just caused so much disruption to the game. That's all it did.
I think I played in one of those games where we were playing against that one guy that was playing his rune deck that he was trying to make everyone scoop. And usually, like, everyone is having a bad time, and I sat down at the table with Alex, and I saw his general, and I didn't say anything, and I'm like, let's see Rune deal with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just, I had Karmic Justice in there, so if you targeted any of my permanents, you were going to have a bad day.
Yeah.
I had what was it, War Tolls in there. Mm-hmm. So if you tapped your land for mana, you had to tap all of it.
Yep. You were attacking with creatures, you had to tap with all of them.
Yep, basically all the deck did was it made it painful for everyone to play. Mm-hmm. Which, and I remember, because I remember that guy that played that way with that rune deck, he became pretty well known, and everyone hated him for it.
Yeah, then he's like...
And sitting down with Alex, and he's like, yeah, well, this probably shouldn't take long, and I'm sitting there looking at this, looked at the deck Alex was playing, and I'm like, well, I hope, because if Alex, I'm thinking, I hope you can do something, because if Alex gets off first, you're going to have a bad time.
I remember that because he asked me what my win con was, and I'm like, I don't know. I don't think I have one in this deck, and if I won, it was going to be with a couple.
And I remember that game because you made him scoop.
Yeah.
Alex legitimately made him scoop.
And suffice to say, after that, it was with Nick. We were talking about that, and it's true. You should never build a deck to piss off one person.
Mm-hmm.
You should never do that. But at that time, I was like, where we were playing,
they were all playing that way. You had to.
You had to play competitively.
Yeah.
And you were just like, okay, if they're doing this, I'm going
to
do this.
I remember that one night we were playing there, we decided that we wanted to make aims. At that point, we were doing the checklist, and you had to make points, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we were all sitting here one night, like, how can we mess up that point system? And all of us, and then Nick's like, well, Divine Intervention messes that up.
Yeah, it's a draw.
What do you mean Divine Intervention messes up? It's a draw. Nobody wins, so nobody gets points. It doesn't matter how. And we all developed decks one night to try to get to make Divine Intervention go off as quickly as possible. To make it, like, we all built decks that would make... Because Divine Intervention is like a 10-drop spell. We were all playing decks to just ramp into Divine Intervention as quickly as possible and take the counters off and just draw the game out. And that night we did it, I think, out of six games that were going on that night. Four out of the six games ended in draws, and everybody was mad.
Yeah, what was it? Nick was the first one who did
it.
Nick actually did it to one of the top players, and he was just fuming.
He was fuming because, he argued with the owner of the store who was judging the event, and he's like, well, we still get our points because of this, right? And he goes over and looks over, he's like, this simply says this is a draw. Nobody gets any points. Mm-hmm. There's no points awarded in this game.
Yeah, because they were the end of the game points.
Yeah.
Since there was no defined winner, you couldn't do it. Everybody was still in the game, and I think he got it off on, like, turn six or
seven.
Yeah,
he got it on turn six or seven before anyone could actually get any points in the in-game points either.
Mm-hmm.
I think Nick
even got the most points, I think. It was like four.
Yeah.
Everybody else got like two or three.
No, everyone else got none.
Yeah.
He got 4 points, and everyone else got no points.
Yeah.
Just completely screwed it. Like, Nick did it, and then Corey did it, and I did it with my graveyard. I built it into my graveyard deck.
Mm-hmm.
I pulled it off with my graveyard deck.
Yeah.
And I can't remember if someone else did it, but four out of the six games that night ended in draws. And everyone left that night pissed. And that was our goal. Our goal was just to be like, all right, let's turn the tables on these competitive players and make it so they don't get any points.
Yeah, then the whole Prosh food chain thing.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, you have to be able to counter the food chain or destroy Prosh before food chain hits the table.
Yeah.
And that was the way it worked.
Secret combos are just super annoying.
Yeah.
And with Prosh...
super annoying.
Mm-hmm.
And with Prosh Food Chain, it's just stupid.
Yeah.
Because it's infinitely casting, and it just takes one storm trigger. And he had... What was it? I think he had Dragon Storm.
Yeah.
He had Tendrils of Agony and something else.
Yeah. And from that, I think from that era, I think we didn't see any changes in EDH until Theros came out, because then we saw the blue-white, I steal the top of your deck and gain life.
Daxos
deck, which that one came in. Daxos came in pretty fast, and he changed the format a little bit.
Yes, he did.
Daxos was really cool. Around that time, I don't think there was any big hot-button issues really had to deal with. I think we were still dealing with the whole Terastodon debate, because that was over.
Terastodon was the hugest.
Yeah.
That was pretty much like the first 6 months of the mm-hmm. podcast was how to deal with
Trastodon
and competitive.
Yeah.
The competitive edge of players.
Yeah.
How can you make EDH more fun since it was supposed to be a free-style
And this
was
around
game.
The time where we didn't have a store to play at, really.
Yeah.
So shortly after, I think, the third season of the store we were playing at, that's when the EDH League came to my house.
Yeah.
And that is when we started our EDH League and getting everything working.
Mm-hmm.
And then we dealt with a lot of stuff dealing with that.
Because
we had a lot of personal ban cards that people wanted banned just within the group, and that led to a lot of stupid drama that I'm going to leave it at that. It was stupid.
Yeah, I mean,
we had people hating out cards because they hated certain people's decks, and they wanted
like
that banned because they hated somebody's deck.
Perforos.
Yeah.
That's like, really? Perforos?
No.
Yeah, that was dumb.
No.
Like, yeah.
I'm all for house banning cards. Like,
but when you get to the point where
every profit of Krufix should be on that card, it should be on the actual ban list.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
Yeah.
I still think, in general, the infect, that was the other one, the infect.
The infect rule has always been a hot button issue.
Yeah, because it should be.
If it's half the life total of a regular game, it should be half the life total of the commander.
Because I think it goes up to half the life total in Two-Headed Giant, too, because isn't your life total 30 in Two-Headed Giant?
Yeah.
Because Two-Headed Giant poison is 15.
Yeah. But in Commander, they've never... The Rules Committee in Commander has never dealt with Infect and gave it an official ruling.
Because I've seen Turn 4...
Turn 4 Infect everybody out.
Yeah, Turn 4 Blightsteel. It's not fun.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way to deal with a Turn 4 Blightsteel.
Mm-hmm.
I
mean, there's plenty of it.
Yeah, if you have them in your hand.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he had to have the cards in his hand to get his turn 4 life steal. Sometimes you lose those games.
Mono Blue can do it on turn 4.
My personal favorite is when
I first
met Nick. And Nick, played the one Sphinx that put your life total to 10.
Yeah, he ticked everyone off with that.
Yeah, he brought my life total down to 10. Then the following turn after that, he killed me. I'm like, this is not a normal game that I've never had that problem in a game. Usually somebody, you know, would leave you alone for a few turns. Nick used to be ruthless.
He used to be a ruthless player, yeah.
Yeah, he didn't really understand the casual aspect of
that. At the same time, like, I get that because I've done that too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I've also done
the other way around where you do that to someone and then you leave them alone. And then you leave them alone for too long, and it screws everything up.
Yeah.
Like, one thing that I've learned about EDH, like, at least in the way I play, is if you can take someone out, you do.
Yeah.
Like if you... Unless you can get... The only time I ever don't is if you can get a serious political advantage out of it.
Yeah.
Like, if you're holding their life in your hands, then it's fine.
Yeah.
Like, I've been in that situation where I was at one life, and the guy had a pinger on the table. I was now his slave for the rest of that game.
Yeah.
Because he could kill me whenever he felt like it.
Yeah.
So it's just like, well,
I still like the game I played against this just random kid who just jumped in, had a Hydra Omnivore with equipment that gives infect to a creature.
Oh, no.
It's like, he attacked once. He was able to do 12 infect to everybody on the board.
Yeah.
And he was able to protect him, too, because he was playing Cynic.
Yeah.
So he had all these counters and stuff. And everybody was his slave on the table because he's like, his following turn after that, he didn't attack. It's like,
what are you doing?
He's like,
we've had a few players. One of our friends is like that. He has an amazing collection. And he will play, and I helped him build one of his decks, and he's made it better over time. But he'll play some crazy, like, just destroy everything, and he'll be on turn 10 or 15 and be like, I could beat you right now, but that's being really mean. It's like, if you can take him out, do it. Like,
on turn 10 or 15, take him out.
Yeah, like, he's just,
I mean,
he'll spend half the game apologizing because he's doing good. And it's like, you know, you don't have to be like that. If you can kill somebody, do it. That's fine. Like,
yeah. I mean, that's the most one of the most annoying things whenever I play a game of EDH is if I'm, like, they've basically told us that they have the infinite combo in their hand, and they're just choosing not to play it.
Yeah.
I find that so annoying.
Just do it.
It's like, just end the game and let's start over. Like, you win. Let's just start a new game.
Yeah.
Why drag this one out another 45 minutes when this game could be over now and we
can
shuffle up and pick different decks or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, that's where we were, I think, in the first half of our of, like, episode 1 through 15. We were just dealing with a lot of that stuff, people playing that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
And talking about how to deal with it.
And as we did the show, we grew and realized, you know, the decks that we thought were competitive weren't really competitive. It was just that we were on a level of playing that no one else was.
Yeah.
We were out to have fun trying new things, while these other people were out to, okay, I can run every game by turn 5.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Then realizing, you know, what solitaring a deck was, that was another big thing.
Yeah.
Because we were all guilty of solitaring at one point.
Yep. Yeah, all of us were. Solitaire decks are just... I still think in my personal opinion, there's certain players that do play solitaire decks, I just refuse to play against them. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing in an EDH game with me is I'm playing EDH with somebody, and they're playing a deck that doesn't interact with everybody else at the table, and they're kind of just playing. I do not like playing against those decks. They're so boring to play against. It's like you can go home and do that. Like, if you want to play a solitaire deck, you can sit at home by yourself and watch TV and do that as much as you want. Mm-hmm. When you come to a table to play EDH, it's supposed to be having social interaction with other people.
Yeah, I mean, there was no interaction. That was the problem. That was the thing. There is no interaction with anybody. There is no helping out when you build those solitaire decks.
No.
It's strictly what's on your board and how to protect it.
Yeah.
Everything around you is...
Doesn't matter.
You're just on a time clock.
Yeah.
You're on a schedule to get this combo.
Then,
and hopefully everybody goes after you because you don't have enough control.
Yeah. And then those players are the ones that you kill that one piece they need to win, and then they scoop in the game and walk away all ticked off because they felt targeted, and it's like, you were.
Going back, I think we talked about it in one of the, it was either this episode, one of the episodes before I got on, or one of the first episodes, the don't get mad when someone kills this list.
Yes.
Chat and showed us. Like, I'm a firm believer of that. It's like, when you played, you cast Lord of Extinction, and you have a Lord of Extinction on your table.
Yeah.
You cannot be mad that everyone on the board wants kill Lord of Extinction.
Yeah, they know if you're playing Lord of Extinction, they know somewhere in your deck, if it's not in your graveyard or your hand already, that you're also playing or whatever the heck his name is.
They can throw it.
Yeah, so they can throw it.
Yeah,
and it was the same.
Cards that were on that list, just like when you cast it, you're not allowed to be upset when someone kills it.
Yeah,
like it's just because what it can do, what it's going to do to the table, and what it's going to just what it's going to do to whatever. Like, you don't get too mad. You just cast something powerful, and everyone is upset that you cast something powerful.
Yeah. And then later on, we talked about, like, the meta.
Yep.
We really
got heavy into meta. That's back when Mikey was still on the show.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is with the meta, and it's still a problem today, too.
Yeah.
It's like people play the same decks. It's their pride and joy. Primal Surge deck. I mean, it's not just at our store. It's at other stores, too. It's like Primal Surge for the win. Okay.
That'd be another card I'd house ban.
Primal Surge.
That's a one card combo. Like,
cast
it, and if it's not countered, you win the game on the spot.
Yeah,
you just need a certain combo to win. But yeah, I mean, it's like, okay, you're playing Primal Surge. I mean, it's a win con.
Yeah,
I've seen somebody Primal Surge on turn 4. Well, good for you. But then all of a sudden, people start knowing your meta.
And they kill you all the time.
They'll take out certain parts of your win con. You know?
And the worst situation I've seen with that, when people play like that, and I've seen this happen at our store, there are certain players that can only play EDH with certain people because other people know the way they play and simply won't even sit down at the table with them and play.
Well, yeah. I mean, what is it? Galissa is another one.
Anything black-white. Mm-hmm. Every black-white deck I have seen played in EDH so far, mm-hmm. every last one of them are just stupid.
Yeah, I mean...
in every way.
Green... what is it? Like, so the part of the meta was trying to understand it, why people were getting so upset about why their decks were being hated out. I mean, how long have you been playing this deck? Okay. You've been playing it for more than 3 months. People know all the ins and outs. They know what to target.
Yeah.
I tell people, you know, when was the last time you won a game? Oh, just last week with it. How about the time before that? Oh, about 3-4 weeks. You got to change things up with your decks constantly.
Yeah.
Especially when you're playing with the same group of people.
Otherwise, they know what you're doing all the time.
Yeah, they know what you're doing. They're holding that counter just for that specific thing because they know it's your win con.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest ones that hit our group officially that made everyone mad, False Prophet, and that Owen enchantment, destroy target non-black creature. Basically, he would play False Prophet. It was a black-white general, I think, Taser or something like that. And he would play False Prophet, and then sack False Prophet to destroy target creature, and then exile every creature on the board. And he'd do it, like, almost every other turn. And
oh,
he had no win con in sight.
Yeah, that was the thing. It's like, oh, I just... Oh, well, his win con was... Eventually, what happens is you're out of creatures, or you were supposed to be out of creatures, and just go in and attack you.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean...
He ticked everybody off. And that was before it went to the store. That was here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that those were awkward moments in my garage.
Because yeah,
he had one table laughing and having a good time, and the other table is just everyone's quiet
and confused.
And one guy is laughing, having a good time, and everyone's looking at him like, if looks could kill right now, buddy.
That was the same night where he took my slow fetch land, and then on his first turn, or on my first turn, I played the slow fetch.
Yeah.
It came to his turn because I was first, he was last. He played strip mine my slow land.
Yeah.
Just because I said I got something cool to do, which was searching for two lands on my turn.
Yeah.
And I was like, really?
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. So basically he made it so we were both a turn behind. And
yeah.
And everybody was sort of confused as to why he would do it. And it's like, well, I don't need you to go off on turn two and win. I'm like...
I'm looking for land, man. Oh, my God.
It's like, if I can make a turn two win deck in EDH, I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah.
You would have seen more artifacts cast turn one.
Yeah.
That would have been an infinity deck. But
yeah.
I don't think there's enough... EDH quality cards to pull off Infinity deck.
And I think, yeah, we hit Theros, and I think Daxos happened, but then after that, we ended up with the Commander decks coming out. And then the Commander decks always changed everything. Mm-hmm. And then we had progressive changes constantly. Like, the second set of Commanders came out, that progressively changed everything. The third set of Commander decks came out, they progressively changed everything. And then Dragons hit, and every format got changed when that one came out, which is really cool.
Yeah, I mean, looking at decks online, as soon as Dragons came out, a lot of Dragon decks.
Oh, God, yeah.
But it wasn't so much that. It
and
was
I think
just
one
the
of the
whole...
biggest price spikes we've seen in a very long time.
Scion
was a buck bulk rare in Dragons, and then
20 bucks for the...
The basic one.
Yeah, and like $100 for the foil.
Yeah. Although, Scion is one of the biggest benefactors of EDH foil prices I've ever seen.
And off one set alone.
No, before that.
Oh.
Before that, when he was a 50-cent rare, he was a $50 foil.
Yeah.
Like, that is a 1,000 to 10,000% increase in value.
Yeah.
Just because it was foil. And that, like, that was the biggest one I've, like,
seen. Yeah.
Like, more, normally, like, even if it's an EDH staple, it's $10, $15 more.
Yeah.
It was $45.50 more because it was an EDH card.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It was just...
Yeah, that was kind of progressively went up from there, and now we're at episode 50, and I think with we're at episode 50 right now, and I think Origins comes out and everything's going to change dramatically again.
You're definitely going to see an influx of monocolored decks.
I'm still waiting for them to do a modern style. Come up with a modern style EDH
format,
and a vintage style format.
Well, we have a few players at our store that's all they play.
Yeah, because
they don't like the
fact
vintage
that
stuff because it just makes ticks everyone off all the
because
time.
There's a lot of convoluted combos in it.
So their method of getting away of convoluted combos.
And that's because of one person not knowing the rulings of the combos.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, a person says. Told him to take these two cards, put it in your deck because it's a combo.
Mm-hmm.
Just gives them the basic outline.
Yeah, we got a few players that do that now.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, it's good that, you know, you're going out and looking, you know, getting these cards to make, you know, a deck that is viable to play.
Yeah.
But you also need to know how the cards work together.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know all the rulings. I'm still that old school guy that uses the timeline.
Yeah.
I mean, where you were only allowed to cast the same creature once per turn.
Yeah.
Because the way the timeline worked, you couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a totally different game. It was to fix Palancron.
Yeah.
The combo, Cloud of Fairy combo. Then when they did with the stack, is made the Palancron an ETB trigger, which reversed what they fixed with the Palancron.
And play Ghostly Flicker and Palancron and... No, Ghostly Flicker, Palancron, and Archaeomancer, and you got yourself all the land you're ever going to want.
Yep. And that's basically what happened. And so, yeah, I was really old school. Even coming back into the game, the stack was just being implemented.
Yeah.
And I was like... Okay, I'm getting out, so I don't have to worry about it. And I was like, it probably won't last, because people won't like it.
But yeah, so we've come a long way since episode one. I think the game, and just doing 50 episodes, the game changed that much. I find that amazing.
I mean, we went away from the point system completely. And
we'll be going into that here soon, too. So. Next question. What have we learned / taken from our show and used in play? Have you done anything we talked about in this show? Has it changed the way you have built decks going forward?
Yeah.
Right, some of the Super Secret Protector talked about.
Like
before I came on the show, like I think it, again there was like the episode or two right before I came on the show.
Yeah.
You talked about all of the artifacts let you copy activated abilities, like a thousand year elixir, Rings of Brightheart. What's the other one?
Illusionist Bracers.
Like, all of those, like, some of those ended up in my Ghoul Color Gisa deck because of that.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't have, like, I need a 1,000-year elixir for it, I think.
Yeah.
The 1,000-year elixir is just a solid card.
Yeah.
And it was getting to the point where, you know, people were playing cards that needed to be talked about. I mean, Illusionist Bracers eventually is going to be one of those cards that's going to be used all the time.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be that one legendary creature that everybody's going to say, holy crap, this is awesome.
Yeah.
I was super excited about that with... Like, I love it in my Ghoul Color Gisa deck, because then it's one...
That deck's gross. Like, I love that deck.
It's one of my favorite decks.
I think when I'm bored sitting at work sometimes, I'll actually go and find it on Tapped Out and just... Solitaire that deck out on Tapped Out.
Well, like with my new when Chandra comes out, I'm going to be throwing it in Feldon,
yeah.
and whenever I get the chance, I'm going to be throwing Illusionist Bracers on Chandra.
Yeah. So dumb. Illusionist Bracers on Jace. Come on, really?
Loot for two?
Yeah.
Draw really two, discard two? Why not?
Yeah.
I mean, so, yeah, it's... the Super Secret Tech thing and all the other cards, like the top 10 and stuff like that that I did too. I mean, it came in handy. My only regret was doing Grind My Gears.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and later on I realized, yeah, people weren't very happy with it because it was just an angry...
Some people agreed with you.
Yeah, some people agreed with me, but it came down to just... possibly even losing viewers because it was like, I play like that. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
Why would you say something like that?
Yeah.
You know?
But, yeah.
But, that was...
Yeah.
But all in all, I mean, the top 10 and Super Secret Tech and, what was it, value cards that I did?
Yeah.
Like, under...
Corey's section was really good, too. I like Corey's section.
Oh, Hidden Gems?
Hidden Gems.
Yeah.
Corey, I thought that was really cool. Which, honest to God, True Super Secret Tech really became just a carryover of Hidden Gems, really.
Because
Corey would find just crazy stuff. Corey was fun to have on the show. I have to say, I've enjoyed having every single one of the hosts we've had on the show and working with everyone. But my big thing I took from the show was when Brainstorm Brewery had the Theory of Commander. Bringing on the guy that wrote the Theory of Commander and interviewing him and having that whole big theory, that virtually changed the way I looked at EDH decks. Just his whole theory behind putting the proper mana in your deck, the formula he used to put the proper mana in your deck being you take the legendary creature you want to use and subtracting 4 and starting at 40 as your base land, and then, like, if you have a 6-drop, you actually go to 42 land instead of 40, because statistically, it gives you greater chances of not missing a land drop, which in EDH, missing a land drop is huge.
Yeah.
So for me, that was really big. And then just, I remember before we did the Theory of Commander, I went with a lot of tutors. I think all of us did. Played a lot of tutors, and after we kind of got into the theory and started applying it, we found drawing cards was way better than tutoring.
Yeah.
My gameplay got better. My gameplay got better. My win loss percentage in EDH went up because I was drawing instead of tutoring all the time. My phone came off it, but instead of tutoring all the time, for me, the Theory of Commander was huge, and
it taught us a lot.
Yeah,
I mean, it taught us the basic deck like concepts, how to prime a deck.
Yeah,
that was basically it. What your primer should be to get your deck running efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he said for a beginner, 40 lands in your deck.
Yeah.
Plus half of the casting cost. So
yeah.
I've never had that many lands in my deck, ever. I get above 36 on rare occasion.
Yeah.
My five color, my Scion deck has
like he was purely applying that formula as in making sure you always have a land drop all the time and relying less on mana rocks. Which for me, again, I played mana rocks galore, and one Vandal Blast would just completely destroy me. I had nothing after that.
No, yeah, I mean. Well, with me too. I mean, with my my Sleznia deck, that was running 40 lands. Then I was finally able to get it down to 32.
Yeah,
my elf deck runs 32.
Yeah,
or maybe 33.
Yeah,
that's because it's an elf deck.
Yeah,
man, out the wazoo anyway.
Yeah,
but
that's what it was.
Most of mine end up at 35.
And on top of the Theory of Commander, I actually learned a lot from people that I was on the show with, like Corey. Like Corey's method of how he deals with answers. He didn't play when he would play EDH. He never played EDH to I want to play this combo. and I want to keep playing this combo, someone else will destroy this for me. He played on the level of he wanted to make sure he had answers to his in his deck to everything everyone else was going to play. So he made sure he had the removal any way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. And I remember before that, I did a lot of that. I would play decks the way I wanted to, and I would lose a lot more games because, well, someone else is going to destroy an artifact that's bugging everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran into that trap, and I just, with Corey, Corey's way of doing that kind of changed my method. And between those two things, I got better, and I started winning a lot.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that was the great thing about Corey. All his answers were spells that had two possible
yep.
outcomes to it.
Yep.
It could just, like, he had Naturalize in there. He did not run Erase.
Yeah.
Or Disenchant. Or he would run Disenchant or Naturalize.
Rain of Thorns is one of his big ones he played in every deck.
Yeah, because it did one of two things.
It hit, like, three or four things.
Yeah. I mean, it was one of those things where he realized that, okay, I can't just localize a spell to do one
yeah.
thing. He made sure that a spell had
yeah.
two ways of working, if not three.
And over our 50 episodes, we had a lot of hosts that we brought in that, including Brandon, that, like, they would bring just something completely new that we just didn't look at, that we just didn't see, because, you know, we just didn't think like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was always good. That's what I took from the show. Anything, Brandon?
Yeah, like I said, I haven't been on here very long.
Yeah.
But I've always, with the Super Secret Text and stuff like
yeah.
that, it's always been a big,
mm-hmm.
a big thing that I've looked at.
Yeah. Accomplishments, proud accomplishments for our show. This kind of, it deals with the show, but it more deals with the fact that, we had come off of the other shop being unhappy with our league. We started doing league at my house, and we developed our own EDH league. Then the fan zone opened up, and I started with found our league to the fan zone, and now we're sitting on a product. I think we're going into what, season four, Brandon?
Yeah, it's the fourth one.
We're going to be going into season four of EDH league, and we have maintained a level. We have maintained a very big player level, a diverse group of EDH players.
They routinely get 25 to 30 people.
Yeah, we routinely get 20 to 30 people every EDH league.
Yeah, and this last, with the prize pool.
Yeah.
I regret not paying the $10. I really do.
Oh, yeah.
Because
foils.
What was it? Yeah, Foil Shouldred, the promo card from pre-release. There was so many.
There were so many cards I needed for my cube in that binder. I was upset with.
Yeah.
Like Foil Putrefy, Foil Mortify. I was like, oh no, I need all of these things.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a beautiful setup, and it was like, I'm like.
And I guess that's what he's gonna do from now on.
Yeah, it was just a beautiful setup.
Yeah.
No one walked away unhappy.
Yeah.
You know, it was.
And for me, we started our league with 8 people in this garage we're in right now. That league has extended and evolved a lot over from the time we started it to what the fan zone has now, and it is thriving. To me, that is a big accomplishment. I am very proud of that. And we came a long way. We went from having, you know, you can only get 25 points a week, or was it 15? Like 15 points, 23 points a week or something like that.
It was 15.
15, yeah. Where you had a checklist where you had to be the first person to kill something and all that. We went from that to just throwing that list away completely and just show up and play.
Yep.
Don't worry about the tickets. If you show up every week, you're getting 2 tickets, and then it's all drawing random draft. The random draft atmosphere of the league, I think, is what really sells it. Because you don't have to be, I win every single week to
yeah, it's
to
not like you
get,
have to win to get the tickets.
No.
Your improved probability of getting first pick. It's just
yes.
show up.
You just
it
show
matter
up.
If you win or lose.
Yeah.
You just got to show up every week and play.
Yeah, and that's the point of EDH. The point of the game is to just sit down and play a game of Magic and have a good time.
Yeah, It should never be.
Yeah.
It was designed as a casual format.
Yeah.
There should not be this level of stress saying, I need to do this so I got a chance of getting this card.
Yeah.
It should be like, okay, I might get a chance to win this card at the end of the season if I get lucky enough in the draw.
Yeah. And I'm going to agree with Alex when we talked about the league and where it has gone. Alex, I think, summed it up perfectly. It's dead on. We fixed it. It's perfect.
Yeah, it is. It is. You can't do
better than that.
I mean, it's... we got rid of the competitive edge
yes.
to it. We've gotten rid of... We pretty much got rid of the hurt feeling.
Yes.
Which was the hugest problem we had.
Yeah, the only thing that brought up hurt feelings was the tuck thing. Da-da-da! Which led to, of all our episodes, when I title them, I think my all-time favorite going down in history is going to be the episode that I dubbed Brandon's Feel Bads. I loved that episode. Out of every episode we've done, I think that is my favorite episode. Because, see, you guys were there for the conversation. You guys don't actually... I do the editing, so you don't get to listen to the whole show. I got to go back and listen to... Normally when I'm main hosting, it's, you know, I got to keep everyone pushing forward, so I got to talk more. Well, Brandon, that episode, was doing such a good job of whining that it was like... Keep going. I'm going to sit here and just listen. It was just every aspect of that episode was gold. And then I'm sitting there at the end, and I'm like, well, I'm going to title this. I'm like, Brandon's Feel Bad.
I'd like to point out that while I was whining, I will admit that, I was whining a lot, I still think I had very valid points.
Oh, you did.
In my whining.
Yep.
You
I
did.
I whined about my points.
You did.
I the whole Tuck Girl stuff. Casual format, but
yeah.
I still think it was because of MTGO.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of Brandon's points, but it's not going to stop me from picking on him.
Yeah, it's still specifically, I think, because Magic Online couldn't
fix it.
Since you're supposed to always know where your commander is, and that way if you ever, because it was the whole, if you ever manifested your top commander, you had to know that it was your commander. And I don't think the MTGO could handle tracking that information.
Yeah.
And they can't expect Wizards to fix MTGO, because that's a joke.
Yeah.
If I've ever heard one, is getting Magic Online to work properly.
Well, yeah.
Well, they got it out of beta testing and all that stuff after, what, 5 years?
Yeah. And now they have a program that everyone's leaving now because everyone's sick of it. Oh, Modo. No, Modo has lost a lot of people with the new program.
Well, that and...
Well, they've also made it much harder to go infinite on.
Yeah.
So it's harder to grind out stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing is with infinite combos and stuff, too, on MTGO, unless you really know what you're doing...
Yeah. You click a lot.
You click a lot, and you might run out of time.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. That's what people will wait for. Is
they're waiting for you to run out of time?
Yeah, you waiting for you to run out of time instead of...
Oh, I remember that. Popper Storm, like you did never scoop out of a Popper Storm, because if they couldn't click fast enough, they were gonna lose because they'd run out of time. So you just let it all out, and that always ticked off the Storm player. Oh my God, they're like, "Well, I'm gonna win. Are you gonna give up yet?" And I'm like, "No, you have 5 minutes left.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Keep clicking,
and have to win game two,
and have to win game two. Keep clicking."
Yeah. So the MTGO, I guess. That was the that's the other problem I have with MTGO. It's a simple fix, too.
Yeah.
Just have a repeat button of the same action you just
did. I don't think they want to do that because of some... That's really... I think if in the hands of the right person, you can manipulate that. If you have a repeat button.
Well, it'd be following a trigger of, like, the third time. Like, you'd be like, I'm going to tap this to tap this,
yeah,
which untaps this. And then you tap them both again to untap.
Yeah.
Like, the third time you do it, it just, like, would you just get a pop-up and be like, is this a cycle?
Yeah.
You want to repeat?
Yeah.
But I'm pretty much, I have an MTGO account, and it's like, it was the biggest waste of money for me.
Oh, God, yeah. Like, it's expensive. Like,
oh, yeah. At that point, you're just maintaining two collections.
Yeah.
Having a paper collection and a digital collection. It's
yeah.
It's the most insane.
Mm-hmm. And the disclaimer is, if by any
anything
if anything happens to MTGO, they're not liable.
They're not liable for you losing your collection. You just wasted a bunch of money.
Yeah. So it's yeah. in the disclaimers. Yeah. I mean, it's like you could have spent thousands and thousands of dollars on it.
And
all
it's
of
gone.
Us,
and
it's
and
gone.
And they just decided to stop supporting the servers or whatever. Yeah. Like, shutting down the servers at the end of the month.
Yeah.
Yep. You've got $1,000 worth of, like,
nothing.
Memory.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Of memory that's not worth anything.
Yeah. But do you have any accomplishments so far?
Well, I mean, just the evolution of the game and what the you, me, and Nick accomplished and got it to where it is today. I mean, it was a lot of work.
Yeah.
And a lot of thinking and how to make the game fun for everyone.
You got any accomplishments, Brandon?
No. I don't know if I've been on the show long enough.
So you got the benefit from it before you were a host because we talk about it every week. So you got in on those conversations all the time.
Yeah, that's true. I was the behind-the-scenes host for a while.
Yeah. Actually, you were. It took a lot of your points before you were actually on the show. So you've kind of been here, technically, if you want to be technical, probably ever since episode 25. Because I remember a few times, like, well, Brandon's work. I'm going to go pick his brain because then I have something to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Being used.
So, but yeah.
I expect royalties now. Going back there.
But the next thing, before we go into Super Secret Tech, Alex, what are your future plans for the show, being that you will be taking over, passing the torch off to Alex as the main host?
Yeah, as of right now, I have one guy who's accepted my request. He is a level one judge. I'm still going to be looking for another person.
You don't want Brandon to come back?
If Brandon wants to. I mean, it's going to be a little easier. It's going to be like during the weekend sometime, not on a Sunday night.
Yeah.
Because Sunday nights suck for me.
Yeah.
So.
It's at that point, it might become a scheduling problem. I don't know. We'll talk about it off air.
Yeah, but no, I plan on doing it. I'm looking, basically, since I'm not a judge, I want to find some judges where I can think outside of the box, come up with the most convoluted concepts.
Yeah, because you're wrong.
And then we'll put the box back around you and go, no, stop it.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's when thinking can actually occur, because it's like, well, you never thought of that before because the rules have told you otherwise. Or or this card, or the way the standard works right now doesn't work, you know.
Yeah.
Currently, like with the vintage cards, some of the standard rules don't really apply to
them. Yeah.
One of my favorites of that is the whole lifelink that's not lifelink.
Yeah.
That was another thing I brought up to Alan today. I was like, I don't remember how we got on the subject. I'm like, yeah, if you put armadillo cloak on somebody else's creature,
it's double lifelink.
It's just like it's not double, unless the creature already has lifelink, but then they gain the life. You don't gain twice as much.
Yeah.
But if you put it on their creature, it's like one of the weird vows from the first commander set.
Yeah.
It's like it gets +2/+2 a keyword and can't attack you.
Yeah.
You do the same thing, like, it's the same thing. You just put that on their creature. It's like, okay, that guy got +2/+2 and trample, and whenever it attacks, I'm gaining that much life. Now, it's controller, because it's not life.
Yeah. You go after the other two.
So it's like, if you attack me, you're going to do zero damage to me.
Yeah.
If you attack them, you're going to do all of the damage, and then I'm going to gain life.
Yeah.
So it's a really awesome foul.
It kind of shuts a creature down.
Well, yeah, but in multiplayer games, they're going to use it to their advantage and try to figure out
like
a way.
Put it on an Avacyn.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, you've got a 10-10 Avacyn with trample. Have fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going to do anything to me, but you have a 10-10 Avacyn with trample.
Have fun with it. Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, that's basically what I'm looking at is it will still be EDH-based. I'm going to broaden it out so we talk a little bit of how it affects also, like, standard and modern, like what we've been doing.
Yeah.
Just to get into it a little more.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe talk about the metas of standard and modern.
Kind of generalize the show into more magic and not so commander-based.
Yeah, in commander-based, because technically you do run out of things.
Yeah.
We do run out of things for commander. And even with Tiny Leader coming up, there's still not a meta for it.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot to talk about with...
it's a complete chaos.
It's in complete chaos. Right now, the only meta I've been seeing is Land Destruction.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of Land Destruction.
Oh, that hurts.
Because right now it's Rakdos Land Destruction. Because what you do is you play Waste Knot, destroy their lands. All they're going to discard are spells and creatures.
Yeah.
And you're getting extra... Yeah. You're getting creatures from it. You are getting extra cards.
Yeah.
And then the best part is if at a certain point you just misinformation and put three spells on top of their library and start the whole thing over again by that time you win. So.
That's your plans?
That's pretty much my plans.
That's pretty much all we really have for main topic, where the show has been, where we're going. I'll get into my little thing after Super Secret Tech, because I have some stuff to say. Super Secret Tech, what do you got this week, Alex?
Oh, let's see, what is my first one?
Miri's Guile is on our list first.
Miri's Guile. One green enchantment out of Tempest.
Oh, the green Divining Top.
Yeah,
it's the green Divining Top. At the beginning of your upkeep, look at the top three cards, put them back in any order. I mean, it's a perfect pair with... it's just good at EDH staple card because you can pair it up with
Sylvan Library. Deck.
It's just your extra, basically like an extra card.
Yeah.
It's
a $13 card.
It's a $13 card, but well worth it. And there's only one of it out there. There's only.
Yep. It was only in Tempest.
Only in Tempest. My next one was
Mundungo.
Mundungo.
Whatever the heck that is.
Mundungo, one black, one blue, one other. Tap him. Counter target spell unless they pay one and one life.
That's dumb.
Okay. Esper Taxes deck.
Oh my god, that's dumb. And on top of that, it can be played in tiny leaders.
Yeah. It's just like I said, Esper Taxes, because you can also play Judge's Familiar. All these, you know, things that... Sylvan Scrying, or not Sylvan Scrying, I don't know. Rhystic Scrying.
Yeah.
Or Rhystic Studies. Rhystic Studies. Yes. You know I'd get there eventually.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just a solid... It's just a little annoying card, and that's also out of the Mirage?
Yeah. That one?
Yeah, it was a
Visions. Mundungo, I think it was Visions. I'm already off the page, sorry.
Yeah, it was off Visions.
Visions, yes.
And then my last card was...
Dracoplasm?
Dracoplasm!
That's one of my favorite of the cards you have.
It is insane. It's insanely stupid. It's one red, one blue, shapeshifter. When he comes into play, it's an ETB. Mind you, it's ETB. I looked up the ruling on it. Sacrifice any number of creatures. The total number of creatures' power becomes its power. Total number of toughness in creatures becomes its toughness. It's flying and it has fire breathing.
Mm-hmm.
So
I just immediately thought of Thraxamunder deck. The great pack.
Yep.
He's like, oh, we're going to play Thraxamunder token. Because I believe Thraxamunder says when any player sacrifices a creature.
Mm-hmm.
So then you get to sacrifice five things. It's a 10, 12. Everybody else sacrifices five things, and now your Thraxamunder is gigantic.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Dracoplasm is probably one of the silliest cards I've ever seen. I would go as far as making an Anthem deck around it and using it.
Wow.
Just
pretty crazy.
It's just a Tempest card, too. It's out of Tempest. I mean, it's fast, effective. If you're just... I mean, you can play, like, a token deck with it and just and just cause a whole bunch of...
Jeskate tokens. Jeskate tokens. Oh, my God. America tokens.
Yeah, and I mean...
Yeah, and then you get all the white anthems. They're all your tokens. They're 3/3s.
Yeah.
I'm going to sacrifice 4 3/3s. I have 2 minutes 12/12 with flying and fire breathing.
Yeah. Have fun dealing with this.
No, God.
Yeah, it's probably one of my favorites because I ended up getting that out of that binder collection that I won on eBay for $20. the only card that was, the only reason I bought the binder was because it had a Deadeye Navigator and I thought it was cool. And then there was a few foils in
there.
But I thought, oh, I don't have a Deadeye Navigator, so every page has got a rare. It's all rares, but bulk rares.
Yeah.
A couple of them are worth like $2 or $3.
Yeah.
Then I saw the Dracoplasm because that wasn't one of the pictures they showed. And I'm like, that's neat.
Yeah, it's like a 50-cent card, too.
I was like, I might play that in a Delver deck.
Yeah.
You know, one day.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, yeah, Dracoplasm is definitely an interesting card.
You just play Delver turn one, it gets flipped, and then you cast this, and sacrifice your Delver. Now you still have Delver, but your Delver has fire breathing.
Oh, my God.
You're just literally upgrading. You added a red mana to give your Delver flying breathing, because it's still a 3-2 flyer, but it just has...
That's ridiculous. Oh, that's mean.
Yeah, so, but yeah, I mean, that's the whole beauty part of, like, Super Secret Tech, and that's one thing I'm going to keep on the show, too, because a lot of the old cards, people don't know about, and they just get forgotten because they're not played in, like, a modern or vintage tournament or anything like that. So there's a lot of quality EDH cards out there that people, you know, like, Dracoplasm does not have to be played in Tiny Leader. It can be played in normal EDH as a bomb drop.
Yeah.
Literally
a
bomb drop.
It's not an early drop, but it's later on, you once you have a lot of tokens in play.
Yeah.
And it's not uncommon to have EDH games go for 20, 30 turns.
Yeah, and once everyone else spent all the removal on all of your other stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like, here's this other gigantic red.
Yeah.
How many red mana do you have open? Well, it's around 20. I got, well, with all my mana doublers up, 30.
Yeah.
It'd be also really fun to run that in a thief deck. Like, you're just like, I'm going to active freeze in that. I'm going to
steal everybody's stuff.
That, attack you with them, and then sacrifice them to my Dracoplasm to make my Dracoplasm huge.
Yeah.
I wonder if what Dracoplasm reads. It's called a shapeshifter. I don't know if they...
It's still a shapeshifter. It's Oracle, the shapeshifter.
Okay.
Yeah, it's still a shapeshifter.
So, yeah, I was wondering if it got, like, the changeling...
No, it's still a shapeshifter. Changeling is only Lorelin.
Changelings are always shapeshifters. Shapeshifters aren't always changelings.
Yeah, it's a special name just for that block.
Okay. All right. They did fix it also in the Onslaught block with some of the misforms, like Misform Ultimus.
Yeah.
I think they gave it the Changeling subtext.
Uh-huh.
Because it does everything a Changeling does.
Yeah, that might be a special situation.
Yeah, because a lot of the like those cards, like the Misform Ultimus was everything.
Yeah.
Including walls, but it could still attack.
Yeah. Cool. Shout out to Neomail, only had one comment, Ben Eagleton, he liked last week's intro, because I used Life of Brian.
Oh.
It was, part of the, text where, part of the show, or that in the movie where they were talking about, what did the Romans give to us? And they're, like, naming a whole bunch of things off, and it ends with, John Cleese, one of my favorite actors of all time, going, well, they did this. Shut up! Tell them to shut up!
Misform Ultimus does not have Changeling.
It doesn't?
Nope. It's just, it's Oracle text says Misform Ultimus is every creature card, even if this creature card isn't on the battlefield.
Yeah.
It does not have Changeling.
Okay.
It's it changes in the long way.
Yeah.
And it's an illusion.
It basically has the Changeling stuff. Yeah.
But that's kind of where we're at for shoutouts and stuff. I have a few things I want to say, and then we'll close the show down. I'm leaving as main host, but my time with Commander's HQ isn't done. I'm still going to do the editing and the posting and all that stuff. And I agreed with Alex to pop up from time to time on a set review because I still like doing set reviews. But Alex is taking over the show. Compared to Brandon and these guys, they came, you know, Brandon came on episode 10 or, you know, with 10 or 12, so Alex was here since episode 1 of Commander's HQ. For me, I started on Popper to the People. I started as a listener just like you guys, listening to a show, always listening to an episode of Popper to the People, and always oh my god, like, I have this to say, and was active on the forums. Came to a point where Chris Plummer, the guy that was running the show, he's like, well, hey, we need another host. Do you want to come on? And that's where my adventure started. I've now spent 5 years as a podcast host. Anyone can do this. If you have any interest in something, anyone can step up and do it. It doesn't cost that much. In fact, everything we're using right now, when I post the show and record, is free. I download the stuff for free. There's programs out there for free, and MTGCast has been really, really good to us. There's a few people that really brought me into this, and I'm really thankful they did, because I have enjoyed everything I've done podcasting. I've enjoyed everyone I've worked with. Chris Plummer's the one that got me into this. He started me on Popper to the People, handed the mantle of main host of Popper to the People over to me when he decided he wanted to go. He does a show for video games now called Playing for Cheeps, and I still listen to that show. I listen to a lot of podcasts during the week. Everyone I've worked with, Peter Omscheid, one of my friends locally, I've enjoyed working with Mikey K. I've enjoyed working with Alex and Brandon, and there's a lot of people, big long list of people I have enjoyed working with. But for me, I guess 5 years was a big long trip of just, it's a lot. And I think it's time that I just kind of sit back and let somebody else take over and plan out, you know, the direction they want to take this show. And I have no problem sitting there going to the passenger seat and just posting and editing. I thank everyone out there that made it possible for me to be a podcaster. MTGCast has been great. As well as whatever Mike was posting us on. I can't remember that one. The one that Mikey K was on, that was awesome working with them. There's a lot of good podcasts out there. I recommend anyone look them up if you're interested in anything. And if you're a listener out there that says, "Hey, I could do this," I'm telling you right now, you can. You just got to put the time and effort into it and do it. It's been, 50 episodes of Commander's HQ, and I think I did 180 episodes of Popper to the People. So for me, it's been a long trip. It's been a lot. But, you know, I'm just at a point where I just want to go back to being a gamer. I want to play games and just not have to worry about having enough to talk about every week and all that stuff. And just doing all that. Kind of where I'm at right now. I'm going to pop in from time to time. For set reviews and stuff, and, you know, who knows, there might be something that happens at the store, and I kind of want to come on and talk about it, and I'll probably do that, but for me right now, I'm going to sit back and relax and enjoy the community that I've helped create, and I'll probably be active on the forums. I'm going to keep maintaining the Commander HQ Facebook page. Alex will keep you updated on what he has planned. I'll just keep conversations going on the forums. So, it's been nice, but I have enjoyed working with everyone. But it's time for me to go, and go on to other things, and play other games, and do stuff. So, it's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, have fun.
But, that's all I really have to say. But I think it's traditional being I'm leaving and Alex is taking over. I think Alex should end the show.
What?
Yeah.
Well, until next week,
I'm Nate.
I'm Alex.
I'm Brandon.
This is Commander's HQ.
You guys gotta do something. There's this guy, Nasty Nate, who's after my cocktail fruit, and everyone here likes fresh fish, and then the squirrel master came out of left field and told me I'm his bitch, and help.